meeting at 9:30 a.m. If we can have a roll call, please.
Okay, we are now recording.
If we can have a roll call, please.
Mr. Skaggs?
Present.
Mr. Leeds?
Present.
Mr. Stern?
Here.
Mr. Kaleka? Mr. Wilson? Hey, we have a quorum. Okay.
At this moment, we'll put a call out to the public. I want you to remember that the members of the public may address the committee during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes, pursuant to ARS 38431-01H. The committee members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda. We do have some public members. Introduce yourself, sir.
Yes, my name is Andrew Harshman. I've been a home inspector for about a year and 9 months. I don't know my number off by heart. But I ran into the AZBTR to ask about the requirements for a parallel inspector. You know, currently there are 3 continuous years and over 250 paid inspections. And whoever was writing back, I don't think they had their name on the email, but they had mentioned that other inspectors had brought that up in the past as well and invited me to come and address everybody here. Mostly, I'd like a consideration to maybe keep the same standards, but also maybe add something additional. Maybe it might be something like 2 years and 750 inspections, or 3 years and 250 inspections, or maybe take more into consideration maybe people who are out of state, who moved into state with maybe plenty of experience, 10 years, thousands of inspections. Maybe people who have, on accident, lapsed their, they haven't been continuous for 3 years. Maybe they've lapsed and forgot to pay or took a year or two off, who are maybe starting their business again. So there's lots of different reasons why somebody might want to be able to train other people for their own business but can't, maybe due to technicality, due to getting really busy in their first year, but maybe don't, first couple of years, but don't have that 3 years yet. And so my ask is to everybody here to maybe consider that in the future, on not necessarily changing our current standards, but adding some additional this or this, something like that. Appreciate you guys letting me speak, and
we appreciate you
all the work that you guys are doing.
And sharing your thoughts on that.
Are you going to be able to stick around and look at some of those possible changes right here, right now, today?
Yeah. I wasn't sure. So, you know, whoever's writing me asked if I wanted to add it to the agenda, and I said yes, but then they had come back and said it's too late to add it to the agenda, and then, so I wasn't sure where that was standing, but yeah, I was planning on being here the whole meeting.
Okay. On our agenda today, just so you know, we are going to be looking at possible rule revisions and statute revisions, which might include changes to the fact that you just spoke up.
Yeah, definitely. I saw that parallel inspection evaluation. I had another friend I was talking to yesterday who wanted to be here because he's online, actually. But mm-hmm. I thought that was pertaining to maybe the review and the 10 days and getting back to the inspector, and so I wasn't sure what that part meant.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew.
You're welcome.
Anyone else in the general public has want to speak?
What do you want to
mean? This is Dave Schwartz. I wanted to just bring up one thing or ask a question, really. At the last meeting, there was talk of digital fingerprint cards, and I wasn't sure if that's going to be a B or C. Is that statute or would that be a rule change?
That would be statute.
Sorry.
Statute.
So, go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to say, this is called the public. The board can't necessarily answer that question, but Judy or Kurt, as board staff, may be able to email you an answer to that, David, or it may come up in the course of a context of another agenda.
Yeah, it's either B or C. I want to know when to bring it up is all. So you guys can tell me at that time.
Okay.
Right. And
all right, thanks.
This is
Thank you, David.
Just the committee. Scott said the board can't answer that, but I know he meant the committee.
Right. Very good. Any other comments from the general public? Yes.
Yeah, just real quick. My name is Sean, and I just want to say that I'm here in support with Andrew this as well. So I'm glad that it's on the agenda.
Sean, did you get a chance to sign in there?
I did. Yes.
You did? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Very good.
Is there anybody online who wishes to speak?
Yeah, this is Bill Lacey. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
The Arizona Home Inspector, I would like to bring a couple points to the committee's attention. The first point being the possibility of redefining the definition of the home inspection in regards to the last sentence where it says a residential building of 4 units or less. It also shows up in the limitation, it's general exclusions and limitations of the SOP, where it says these standards are applicable to buildings with 4 or less dwelling units and their garages or carports. I believe there is a large amount of confusion on this statement, on these portions of the rules and the SOP. Examples of this confusion include the updating emails that were sent out from the BTR June 29th as well as August 30th. I believe there's quite a bit of confusion, probably causing you guys some issues down there. As well as, we actually, at Inspection Career Training Academy, we have helped out quite a few parallel students this last year, our first year in business, and what we found is there was actually some confusion. We had one student getting addresses kicked back saying that those would not be counted on his parallel inspections because they were larger than or more than 4 attached units. And then we had other students who attended those same addresses on the exact same day, and those students were granted licensure. So I would like that to be looked at further. That confusion has raised a couple questions, one being Arizona home inspectors are required, they're hired quite often, in my opinion, at least 16 to 18% of the time to perform these kinds of inspections. Why are new students and people seeking licensure not being trained on these types of inspections? So they show up quite a bit in our everyday inspection industry. Also, if an inspector was inspected a unit of a building with 5 attached units instead of 4, what is so important about these properties that required the BTR to deny them? Also, if an inspector was hired to inspect a unit of a building with 4 attached units where that building is located in a complex of multiple other 4-unit buildings, would that qualify as a home inspection? Yeah. And lastly, should all Arizona home inspectors have a different agreement for these types of properties since they are technically excluded from the standard of practice? I think these are all just questions that I have, as well as a lot of the other inspectors that I employ to be parallel inspectors. We would just appreciate some clarity there. And my second point being something that I would like to add into the agenda of a future committee meeting is the possibility of adding in education requirements for yearly relicensing of home inspectors. Currently, realtors are required to have 24 units per year. InternACHI requires 24 units per year, and ACHI requires 20 units per year with a 10 carryover. I feel that if these large organizations, national organizations for home inspector training, believe that that's important, I think we should too as a state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Was it Bill or Dylan?
Dylan.
I'm sorry.
Dylan Whitaker.
Whitaker?
Dylan.
Thank you, Dylan. Thank you for sharing your thoughts.
Any other comments?
Thanks for listening.
Any other comments from the general public? Okay, hearing none. Let's move on to the adoption of the last month's minutes, September 7th, 2022. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I will motion to approve the minutes of September 7th.
I need a second.
I'll second. Right. I just got it.
Any discussion?
I'm not seeing anything on my computer. Anything that needs adjustment.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. The motion carries to adopt the minutes. Let's move on to item number 5, review, discussion, and possible action on the following. 5A, home inspector standards of professional practice revisions. Ongoing. It seems to me that we have carried those standards through ASHI. They've been adopted by Arizona ASHI. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I don't believe that there are any more changes to the standards.
Correct. That we know of right now.
So now I ask the director, should we send these standards to the board? And do I need a motion for that?
I think that the standards are ready to go to the board based on the letter that we received. So go ahead, Kurt.
This is Deputy Director Kurt Winter. So to proceed with having the board change our rules, we need to have a rule package to present to the board because the standards are mentioned in our rules. So the board can't just accept them. They have to actually do a rule package to be sent to the Secretary of State.
To be sent, but sorry. I mean, just based on what Peter just said, is it okay for this to go to the board and for them to look at this?
I'm getting to that. It's
okay.
Currently, what you guys have in your board packets with a great deal of rule changes, I want to make the proposition to you guys to make a kind of a decision which way you want to go. Do you want to go the route that we've been taking with a great deal of rule changes and possibly statutory changes, or do you want to do a very simple rule package and maybe play with statutes before making more larger rule changes? Because typically it's kind of a top-down thing where the statute's going to dictate what the rule is, and specific rule changes that have been talked about before might do better if a statute change were to occur first.
Or might require a statute change.
Correct.
To occur before the rule change. So, and you might want to just muse on that thought that Kurt just put out there until we've been through some of these rule changes and discussions today to decide what you think is ready to go or what needs.
So the question is, do we hold the standards until the rules are done and send them both together?
So,
is that the thought?
Well, I think what we had kind of talked about is possibly, maybe you'd be looking at possibly two rule packages. You know, one where you're adopting the standards. So
one just for the SOPs and one for all the rest of the stuff. Maybe.
Right.
That we've been discussing, yes.
Okay.
Especially knowing some might be requiring statute revisions or changes, too.
My only concern is that ASHI now has a new set of standards. Mm-hmm. Our standards, as far as as far as adopting ASHI standards, is now obsolete.
No, it's our rules are just
not true.
They would just specify the 2002.
So we just stay with the date.
They stick with the date.
We can work this through the process.
Correct.
Yeah, the ASHI chapter adopted them as proposed standards, but they're not law yet, obviously.
Yeah,
so no ASHI members in Arizona can be utilizing these legally, as we know, until they're adopted and part of law. So this is more for the proposed standards is what the letter...
The chapter has their own set of standards now.
Right.
So... You know,
right.
It's not anything to do with statute or rules or anything. I mean, it's just ASHI... adopted these standards.
Right.
Those being adopted, now the board needs to adopt the standards.
We don't see a timing issue here, Peter, between ASHI adoption day and our any delay in implementation.
ASHI will be publishing the new standards from here on out?
What, an actual hard copy published?
Mm-hmm.
We're probably going to wait until it goes through.
Yeah.
Because there could be some little change or something that Kurt pointed out. Could be some little change or something that they, Dirk? Is that, might want to change, maybe some.
We wouldn't want
people to have to see.
But we don't want to create any confusion at all with any home inspectors as far as what the proper standards are. So we would want to hold that close to the vest until it's official, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay. Any more discussion on the standards?
Keith Smith. My question is, at what point does the
community get to take a look at this? Is it after you guys send it to the board, or is it after it goes to the governor or to the
standards or the rules?
Oh,
the rules.
The rules.
Are you talking about just the standards?
Well, you're combining. You're going to combine both, right, in the one package?
Like the 90 days to the public kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, when does the public get
when does that happen?
Because that was a big thing when you guys switched that 5 years for parallels. It really didn't go out for public. That was a problem.
If I can,
it has to go out to the public.
Well, it did. It did through the governor's office, but that does, it doesn't through your department. It never went out, and I think it'd be beneficial if you allow the inspectors to take a look at it for comment.
Mm-hmm. So this is the plan. So how the standards are in the rules is that the rules basically says that the board has adopted or follows these standards. The home inspectors have to follow these standards. It has a specific date of 2002. What has to happen is that a rule package has to go through to X that out and put in these new standards for them to be law. So
right.
We have to put in that rules package. Once we put it through and it goes through, then it opens up to the public. This time around, I am going to definitely be sending out emails to the
great.
Home inspector
okay,
community
great.
Saying, hey, this rule package is now out. It's open for public
great.
Comment.
That's what I was asking. All right,
okay.
Thank you.
So,
but following back with Keith's question, so the timing of that wouldn't be until after it comes back from GURP.
Correct.
Right?
It would,
which could be a year plus, right?
No. I mean, part of the rule package is, and I'm trying to look for the flow chart here, is holding meetings here open to the public that are open for comment and public input before any of it is ever finalized. So it goes to the board first. If they approve all the changes that are proposed, it doesn't mean it's set in stone. It just means they're okay with me asking the governor's office to open a rule package in which that whole review process begins, including public comment and input and changes that could be made, you know.
I just think to Keith's point, though, is last time we did a rule package through, there wasn't a grand amount of communication to the stakeholders, the home inspectors,
right.
about that rule package, and he's just asking to make sure that's communicated, hey, this is actually out there
right.
when it's time for a comment.
That's all. Because not everybody...
Like, send email blasts out so you know
that's
that...
what we're saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah, I would hope so.
Well.
So, you're here now, Judith. It's different.
I'm very open to comments.
So what about posting the standards on our website, on the ASHI website? Or shall we do that?
That's
on
ASHI's thing.
Okay.
ASHI can do whatever ASHI wants to do.
Okay.
But I would just say, similar to our land surveyors, I would say make it very clear. Like, the land surveyors updated their standards of practice, and the board hasn't been able to update that, and so on their website it's very clear that says we have updated this, but the Arizona's Board of Technical Registration follows the 2000 version or whatever it is, you know. So if they want to do something like that, maybe they could just make it clear. So
yeah.
Home inspectors aren't confused.
Yeah, and Roger, the chapter has the option too. You know, to solicit public opinion via the azashi.org site and show a redline version. Here's our current, here's what's proposed with the actual redline version that we could get from Kurt if we want to. And then have some kind of portal email us at to provide your opinion. And at least that's some diligence that the chapter can do, especially just in case anyone ever come back and say, gee, we weren't aware of this. Or we hadn't seen this, and we want to give them multiple options to be aware of it, to discover that they can take a look at these proposed standards and provide input, and it sounds like hopefully multiple opportunities, but one from the chapter.
Okay. So what I understand is we're going to put these out on ASHI. ASHI's going to get a lot of feedback. That feedback's going to end up coming back to this committee. All right. So what we need to do here then simply is keep the home inspector standards of professional practice revisions ongoing.
Well,
when
I just kind of my own, my reading is when I read this letter, it's done. It's been approved by AZ ASHI, and we're just waiting for the board to put it into law. So right now, there's kind of a middle ground where they've adopted these, but technically they're not. Our home inspectors in this state are not going to be held accountable to those. They're still going to be held to the 2002 because it's still in our rule. Mm-hmm. These have been adopted. Maybe I should show us that land surveyor site real quick.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just curious why you're looking that up. What we're going to do, and if we are going to address any of the comments that come in between now and when it goes to the public through the system. Are we going to address that?
You know, you wonder if we wait until we get all the comments all together and try to make a final decision on any possible changes.
In this committee?
Well, I mean, at some point we need to assess the input that we get, right? Obviously. And so the question is, do we do it in piecemeal or do we try to group it together and say, okay, you know, and start figuring out, okay, we've gotten five comments on arc fault circuit interrupters. Maybe we need to look back at that. So,
well, would it be better to wait until it goes to the general public through,
you know, in the, I mean, if the public review component is going to be part of the GERC review, which I wasn't aware of, I thought it was after that, then why not, you know, wait until after that 90-day, 120-day period is done, unless there's something burning that we feel, Peter, and then look at any possible proposed changes along with the chapter and see if there's any other tweaks that make sense, is my take. But we could be aware of input, obviously, as it comes in, but we don't need to make any determinations right away.
But, well, my question is this going to be firm? Is this what we're putting into the package, the rule package, without any more changes at this point?
I think right now it's locked, you know?
That's my understanding, is that it's now been approved, and we just need to move forward to have the rule say we're looking at these that were proposed on this date.
Yeah, the chapter kind of locked them in right now. That's what they approved. Yeah. So
that's what the process is about.
So any continued public comment would be during when it's open to the public, through GERC.
Yep.
So,
and any other comment we get from any other, you know, stakeholders, right?
I would have
at
to
that point.
I don't think there's going to be any public comment on the standards because those are AZ ASHI standards. They're going to be making comments about anything in the rule package. The rule package just happens to cross out the 2002 date and enter in the new adoption date.
And that's
the only comment they can say. They wouldn't have comment on the actual standards.
Right.
That's AZ ASHI's.
Right, but we will, as Judith was saying, we will be getting something out to all registrants. These are the proposed. We'd like your input. You've got this many days, right? All the registrants.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
Roger.
And when will that be there?
Next year.
You know what?
What point in the process?
First, just take a quick look at this, what I was talking about with the land surveyors, just so you can kind of see what that might look like.
So, in our rules, just like the home inspectors, there's minimum standards for land surveyors, and this goes back to a 2002 minimum standards for boundary surveys. Even though they adopted new things in 2014, you know, they specify which one the BTR is adopted and which one has not been adopted by the BTR. So,
just so I just kind of wanted you to see what that looked like. And then I just sent Kurt, I just sent you a link in the personal chat to the flowchart for rulemaking.
Okay. Let me freeze this so people don't see my email.
So basically, if the governor's office says, yes, we approve this package, you can open this package, then the agency can notify stakeholders of its intention to enter into rulemaking and seek their input starting right then. The agency drafts the proposed rules and an economic small business and consumer impact statement. Can you see that? So it's like a flow chart of what happens. Yeah. Oral proceedings, public comment. There's a lot of opportunity for public comment. Yep.
And what's the comment period? It's not standardized.
30-day.
30-day, huh? That's all?
I think it can be.
But we could enhance it if we wanted to, I'm sure.
At least 30.
Yeah, at least 30.
Yeah. Oral proceeding and closes the rulemaking record. So there's a lot around that 30-day period, it looks like, Peter, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not just one either. There's another one.
There's
too.
Multiple.
Yeah.
Within 120 days of the close.
So there's ample time for comment from the public and from our stockholders in the industry, right? So we solidify this and put it into the package and don't deal with it until we get to this point. Is that the plan?
You tell me, but that's what I think the plan is, and I think that most of the things that we hear from people that they would like corrections on or enhancements or things like that aren't any part of the standards of practice.
Okay, so they're in the other rules. Everybody's commenting on the rules. Okay,
yeah.
So we keep that bringing me back to my last question, we don't put this in to the board now for their review?
Well,
would that be a good idea?
Unless we do two different rule packages, correct?
No.
I mean, you can have them look at it. You can have them review it, say, we are working on rules, the committee's working on rules, we're taking in common things. So far, these standards of practice have been adopted by the association that we were hoping would happen, and we just want to share them with you. I mean, there's no problem doing that, even if the rest of the rules aren't finished.
Right. But is it a waste of their time?
Them. Oh, I don't think so, because, this is just my opinion, that it's a lot for them to review, so, and you can jump in, Kurt, if you have a different opinion on it. I would say I don't see any issue at all with putting it in a packet, just the new standards of practice, as a starting point, to say, you know, we'd like you to review these are what we're planning on. We're still working on other rules, and then come back with other rules. I don't think it has to be all completely.
So it may make sense to kind of spoon feed them a little bit and say, here's what's coming. Start to digest this stuff.
Thinking.
You know, if you look at the changes in the SOPs plus a ton of rule changes, that's a lot.
It is.
It's
a lot.
Real lot.
Home inspector as a board member, you know.
Yeah.
We would certainly rely on having committee members
And frankly, us three inspectors rely on you guys to understand what the best steps in the process are with the bureaucratic entities, if you will. Because we're not sure what the best way to do this is, and you guys probably know more about what the best step is, if it makes sense to do it in two steps or...
You'd be okay either way.
Okay.
So it's just kind of my personal thought that it's not certainly not a bad thing, but you know, if you feel strongly one way or the other.
Keith,
can I ask, you have a board member sitting on this committee, correct?
Two.
No. Oh, sorry, yes, two.
So what is their function? Don't they bring this kind of stuff up on a regular basis?
If they appear.
Oh, no question. That's all I know. All right.
Which is another subject we should get it on the agenda. But, okay, so what's the advantage or disadvantage? Do you see any for putting this to the board?
Well, it sounds like for the... Kurt, please.
Go ahead.
How about this?
Uh-huh.
I have two versions. Let's start with the simple, easy rule version that would basically push forward the standards. And then we can look at the more difficult one that we've been working on, and you guys can kind of weigh it out in your heads. Which path do you want to go with?
Okay.
Well, as home inspectors, we probably would want to go with the standards, and then we worry about the rules later. But
push forward with the standards, that's what I'm supporting.
All right. Want to take a quick look?
Are we there on the agenda?
I believe so. I think rules came up right afterwards.
Okay, let's take a quick look.
Okay, so you can see up here in my folder here, I have a version 2. So this would affect two different rules, just... It would help us do two things. So let me share the screen as well for those who are online. So, as part of a small rule package, staff would like this language here, within 5 years before the date of application, to be added for regarding detailed explanatory statements when you apply, mainly because we think that anybody who's had something that's been expunged or
happened 20 years previously
shouldn't go before the board.
And for some reason, that wasn't never put in the language to have that backstop. Just look at 5 years immediately preceding.
So this would be a very quick, easy change. I think that...
I thought we actually approved that already.
Well, again, this is a different version before. Uh-huh. This is a smaller rule package, and this is what we would like to propose, just three these in this rule package, because it'd be just nice and easy. Any comments on that?
None.
Okay. So I'm going to hop out of that one and go to 301, version 2.
It's going to be a little busier.
So, yeah. So this would change. You would just scratch that out because it's not needed. It would scratch out the January 1st and add in the November 1st, which is the date that AZ ASHI adopted these current standards. Mm-hmm. Took out some other redundancy that I worked with Deanie Ray, or another AGG, to help with. And then adding the you can't perform or offer to perform a home inspection if you're acting as a real estate agent on the same. So, and that would be the whole package right there, is those three changes, the five-year bit, the standards, and then adding number five here. So, and that would be the entirety of the rule package, is a simple get the standards going, but also fix two small things.
So, Kurt, you just use the date of the adoption.
Correct. Because you guys adopted it on the specific date, and
you
that's...
You don't put a version number down or anything like that?
Nope.
Okay.
Okay, now how will this affect the other version if we do this?
Well, if we were to go with the simplified, we'll call it the...
Short version.
Okay, short version. Right, our thought was that we might be able to just get that through quicker. Mm-hmm. And then, and not hold up the adoption of those standards while we finish the rest of it. Because there's, you know, just as staff, we were pretty animated in our own conversation talking about some of the same issues that people are bringing up. And, mm-hmm. you know, and so I feel like that's going to take a little bit longer. And just, so it was just thought, you know.
Can you define quicker?
not really, because it's kind of out of my control. Quicker meaning less resistance from, you know, the powers that would allow us to open a package in the first place. I can't speak for the board, but I struggle to think that they would have anything opposing this version. You know, I don't even know that they'd have anything opposing the other version. Right, any of those things, I really don't know. But then it's not just the board, it's also the governor's office. So, yeah.
By going this method, that means we have to open up rule packages twice.
Yes.
Okay, and yes. The second rule package, of course, won't have these changes if it was already adopted. They would just
That's
be
right.
written through.
Yeah, yeah. But none of these issues...
Is it a problem to open up two rule packages?
In theory, no, but...
I mean, would somebody say no to the second rule package since we just finished opening up, we just closed up the first one?
It is just a complete unknown. Logically speaking, no, they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and what I'm really asking for is your feeling.
Feelings are okay.
It may be by tomorrow we have different feelings.
All right.
So,
do you feel
open?
Do you feel it's better to go this route and the second package or not go this route?
Well,
Kurt?
I just want to say some of the discussions that staff's been having in this committee, some of the things that people have been bringing up might require more of a top-level statute change. And if
right.
you have this top-level statute change, then you want the rules to kind of mirror those changes. So
and
changing the rules defined. And then changing a statute, then you're going to have to change the rules again. And so we want the committee kind of consider that right now what we've been working on for this rule package has really been a clarifying of things, but to make some real substantial changes will probably require the statute changes.
We're not looking at statute changes in this short version.
No. This short version would not require that. This would be fixing some small problems in the current rules.
Is there anything to hold us back from sending this entire short version to the board now?
Nothing.
No. We could put it on the next.
I'd like to entertain a motion.
Well,
Do you want to see the other package?
Maybe let's work some more and then see.
And see if we need to put something in
I
here.
I agree with you, and I think that that's probably. But let's, yeah, hang on. I need your motion just a little bit.
Okay, where are we on the agenda? We're right there. So let's look at version number two.
So this was version two. Let's go back to the what we had before. So one moment, please. So this is the longer package. This is starting with 102, which is the definitions of the home inspection definitions. We were working on this before. So it kind of rewrites parallel inspection. This, with working with Deanie Ray, she had told me, or I should not say she told me, but we had talked about it, and most of this language here about what happens is not defining what a parallel inspection is, but more regulation.
So it's kind of misplaced.
So it's misplaced, and I have now moved it to 247 in the changes. Mm-hmm. So right now it should just read, parallel inspection means a home inspection completed by a home inspector candidate while being supervised by a supervising inspector for the purpose of meeting the requirements for certification pursuant to 430, 247, 813. And that's what a parallel inspection is.
Okay. And then you go to, and you move that, the rest of that definition down to 247.
Correct.
Okay, so let's,
we still have a reference to producing a report, yes?
That will be down.
Okay.
Because that's, again, part of the application package of what we require.
Okay.
So parallel inspector and the peer reviewer were going to be...
Change to supervising inspector.
Correct.
Okay, and peer review, we haven't made any changes on that except the term supervising inspector.
Yeah, so it's still, peer review is still defined. Mm-hmm. Now, it's, you probably would raise the question, so all of this information that's here, you took it out of parallel inspection, why wasn't it taken out of peer review? And actually, that's a problem for staff, too. There is no place to put it. There's no...
Which leads to a lot of discussion.
Well, we need to put it somewhere, right?
So
well,
it's still currently here, but there's... It's... Well, I think what kind of came up before talking with enforcement staff is that a lot of this is probably actually determined by the board order. And so you don't need to actually specify here how that board order is taken care of. They just need to find a peer reviewer and then... Whatever the order says that needs to be done, they'll do. You need to do three peer reviews and then give it to us. That'll be said in the order. It doesn't necessarily need to be said here. That's been a discussion.
So it's been said someplace else, or you left it here?
I left it for now because it's staff's discussed that, and I haven't really discussed it with you guys.
So, okay, I'm really interested in number three.
And then this here... It was supposed to be the combination of what a parallel inspector is and the peer reviewer, so they both have the exact same requirements to be the same. They shouldn't be different. They should be the same thing.
I understand. You have...
So this is...
On C...
Sorry. This doesn't have the most up-to-date, so let me get rid of the word one. I apologize.
Okay, you got 3B says... Not have received any disciplinary action from the board due to violating any section of R-433-0101 within the preceding 3 years.
What?
The three, I'm assuming, is new?
One more.
Or is it just that you're questioning the three? Is it a too long a period of time?
I apologize. I had the Word document open in case I wanted to open something quickly. This is the one that That's you had in your packet. So this one, it breaks down what are the requirements, so it's easier to read. First one, you have to be good standing with the board, so you're active status. B, not have received any disciplinary action from the board. And this specifies due to violating any section of R-433-01.1, which is the professional standards. The purpose of that is if you get dinged for your firm expired and you have a disciplinary action just because your firm was a month late, you can't do parallel inspections currently. So this would... this. So this one would specify that it has to be a violation under that under the professional standards bit, within the preceding 3 years.
I question if 3 years is a little bit excessive.
So if you get dinged for you have a violation, you can't do parallel inspections for 3 years. Is that too much? Because currently it's 3 years.
So I guess that's the discussion right now. So just to be clear, what is deemed disciplinary action? It used to be that the most lightest disciplinary action was like a letter of concern in someone's file.
It's not even a disciplinary action.
That's not disciplinary.
Right. So disciplinary starts with anything else but that, probably. Okay.
I would say the most minimum that we usually experience is the firm registration. You performed a home inspection, your firm wasn't,
right,
you know, up to, it had to, it had expired,
and
you
get. Yeah.
So you say you want to take firm registration out of this. Where is
not out, but
no,
just
the disciplinary.
Yeah, if you had received a disciplinary action, just due to the basically standards of practice, not because your firm, you had a firm issue.
Okay, so you're referencing the R-433-0101, mm-hmm. which has nothing to do with firm, right?
Correct. Firm is that's a statute violation.
And the question is 3 years too long or too short?
I personally feel you could, I don't, if that's actually what you do and that's part of your business, saying you can't do it for 3 years, I mean, it's hard to determine because certain violations of the Boards Practice Act can be quite high and some can be quite minimal. How do you determine that?
I don't think we should. I think we need to pick a number, and I like 3 years. Is there any other questions about 3 years?
Could it be put into a board order?
You're restricting the home inspector who got disciplinary action in the last 3 years from merely being a supervising inspector for 3 years.
Right. It's just for being a supervisor.
What was the 5 year? We just talked about 5 years.
That's different from that.
That was if you had any convictions in the past.
For a license.
That was
okay.
Just for initial license.
That's an application.
Okay, got it.
So I don't have any problem with 3 years.
Yeah, it all depends on the disciplinary action, as you were saying, Kurt, right? And there's no wiggle room. We'd have to make it 2 years or 3 years.
Does it have to be defined? Is that something that should be put into an order? You know, where one of the things it has to say in an order is that, and you cannot perform, or you, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would work.
It would seem like for the folks doing the parallels, it should be clear to them if they've had a violation, when they can start doing parallels again, right? I mean, it should be clear.
I think so, too. Can we ask Scott, our legal counsel, since supervising inspector is not even an actual license or registration, could that even be possible that just the order could dictate? I don't even know how it can be dictated, honestly, like this, when it's
right.
Not a registration. More like an idea.
Yeah, legally the board would have a tough time with giving somebody disciplinary orders that included terms under which they would be able to act as a parallel inspector simply because, right, parallel inspection isn't the status. You could have a practice restriction under probation to prevent somebody from acting as a parallel inspector, but you wouldn't be able to allow them to be a parallel inspector by board order if they're disqualified under the statutes or rules through having disciplinary action.
So if the timeline was taken out of rule, then the board might be able to, in an order, if there was a disciplinary action in the order, say an amount of time? I'm just struggling because it's not...
It's a difficult question because there are a number of different issues here. One of them that the committee is going to want to consider is that the role of a parallel inspector is sort of that of an educational institution on a certain level. So while it's not a status that the board regulates per se, it is a practice area that the board requires someone to requires someone to go through in order to get a license, but then can restrict the ability of practitioners to provide that practice for students. So it's an unusual little situation. Just from a straight legal reading of the way the whole thing is set up, it appears to be set up so that, you know, with the idea being that if somebody is acting as a parallel inspector for new students, you would presumably not want to have somebody who has been disciplined by the board within a certain amount of time, because clearly that person is training new students, and if they are going to be found in violation themselves, then there would be an argument, presumably, by the people who initially passed that through, you know, the statutes or GERC, that they would not be people who really want training other individuals until they establish that they can practice themselves without having a violation for a certain period of time. So the counter argument to that is going to be that that legally you think that people are able to train other individuals even when they've been subject to board discipline. So in terms of defining when someone would be capable of doing that's entirely going to be up to the committee and up to the board. But it is going to, you know, the question that is inevitably going to be asked from a legal standpoint is going to be, you know, whether or not this person is safe to train other individuals, and conversely, whether there are types of discipline that can be imposed that may not have anything to do with somebody's ability to safely practice, but maybe a purely technical discipline, administrative discipline, which may then prevent them from acting as an instructor. So those are really the type of questions they're going to be coming up with it. But there are a lot of different factors to this one.
So, Scott, if we decided to pull the 3 years out of this package and just simply had it be the call of enforcement, if enforcement felt that this person's violation was as such where they should not be doing parallels for 1 or 2 or 3 years, then that could be part of enforcement and provide that latitude, because there's so much subjectivity to the type of disciplinary action.
I'm thinking now that... Go ahead, Scott.
Well, if I may, I would caution. I wouldn't say enforcement, because that implies that it would be up to a board staff member, such as an investigator, to make that determination. Any determination about whether or not somebody would be safe to engage in an area of practice would be a matter for the board. It would be purely a board question. No investigator, legally speaking, is going to want to make a call about whether or not somebody is going to be able to earn money in a certain area of practice.
I think because you don't have anything in statute, and parallel inspector, supervising inspector is not a registration or something that's tangible, which I think it should be, I think maybe you should just leave that there and just enhance it by not having somebody have the inability to do it because of the term issue.
Well, if we leave it there, then do we leave it 3 years, right?
Can we leave it 3 years and put a or in there within the preceding 3 years or at the board's discretion?
Hmm.
You know?
Nice try, though.
Yeah. How about in term probation? Can we use the term probation in something like this?
Is there a way we could provide some more latitude in this?
Our probation needs supervision. How are you going to supervise?
Well, that's for us to talk about, I guess. But
no, and remember, this is just who can be a supervising inspector. So probation doesn't really fit, you know. I mean, do you care that they've had a disciplinary action or not? So I think you probably do.
Well, there's different levels of disciplinary action, though. I mean, you know, one guy forgot.
Practice Act. I mean, you know, if it's something really silly, they're not going to have disciplinary action. right?
Well, yeah, if it's silly, but if it's like a low grade, something that needs to be addressed, you know, punish the inspector for doing the wrong thing. I mean, can somebody go into, say this is a term of your probation, which is not doing any inspections for at least a year. Maybe something more severe is a 3-year. So that has to be determined by the board, maybe, on what that probation is going to look like.
That would be...
And Judy, if I can just jump in for one more second.
Yeah.
Legally speaking, either of those options are fine. Legally speaking, it could be that the ability to act as a parallel inspector becomes it can fall under probationary requirements. Typically speaking, the board is able to impose probation with conditions that are designed to protect the public. So it could, a restriction on an ability to be a parallel inspector could be a condition of probation. The board would just be looking at it on an individual basis, case-by-case basis, and as part of discipline rather than as an alternative that comes into play following discipline. And likewise, with what Peter Leeds was saying, from a legal standpoint, that would be perfectly fine having the board have that discretion. The easiest way to give the board that discretion is to simply say that it could be considered as a condition of probation. But the board, would, due to the nature of it, it is something that the board or the committee may want to consider adding to the list of things that are examples of what the board could impose as probationary requirements, simply because it is of a different nature than most other probationary requirements.
Because they'd be putting a probationary requirement on their home inspector certification. I mean, do you see any possible difficulties with that? I mean, it's targeted at the supervising inspector or the parallel inspector, but since that isn't a thing, it's restricting practice on their home inspector certification. That's not an issue?
Well, from a legal and statutory construction standpoint or rules construction standpoint, it's going to come down to how it's phrased and what the individual is going to be able to do as a result of how it's phrased. The legal interest is simply in equal application of the law, consistency, and in the board not acting in an arbitrary or capricious manner. So from a legal standpoint, it's much more important that the board be consistent in how it is applying this specific disciplinary resolution or probationary resolution to the situation. If it is attached to a specific, what license it's attached to will determine things, because at the end of the day, the board regulates licenses and licensees. So how it's attached is going to be important as well.
And Judith, we're already putting some rules on the designation of supervising inspector, even though it's not in a license category, but it has been defined. And its role is pretty clear as helping the train and our inspectors. So you would think what I'm hearing Scott say is that it's possible to provide the latitude through disciplinary action for limiting the role as a supervising inspector. I don't see anything inhibiting the role of this inspector that might have had a violation 2 years ago from going out and performing their own home inspections, they can go out and still make a buck. It's just a matter of doing the supervising inspector part. We're already putting rules around that anyway. So,
I have a question for Scott. Scott, if we put in it in that 3 years, the board has every right to waive that 3-year requirement in any specific case, do they not?
No, not if it's law.
No.
There you go.
Right. The question comes down to whether it is a disciplinary, if it's part of a probation, then the board can modify an order, release somebody from an order potentially based upon person's behavior. If, however, the rule states that you cannot perform parallel inspections if you've been found to be in violation of the Board's Practice Act in the previous 3 years, the board cannot waive that. That's the rule. So it's going to depend on whether it's a condition of an individual's discipline through a board order, or if it's a rule or statute that specifically provides for what a licensee can and cannot do based upon a specific factor, such as prior discipline.
Okay. Is it unheard of to write into a rule or at the discretion of the board? So, for instance, within the preceding 3 years or at the discretion of the board?
Well, the issue there is that at that point, you're opening up the board to potential arbitrary and capricious allegations, because at the discretion of the board, you're not specifying any criteria. The criteria was that you not have any discipline within the prior 3 years. And so what you're really doing is sort of saying, here's the rule, but it's not a rule. Legally, yes, you certainly could say that, but you have to look at how it's going to actually work in practice. And if you put for the discretion of the board in the rules, yes, you certainly can do that. The question is going to be how that would actually work.
I can see that would open up the board to unequal discipline.
Peter.
Yes. Your name again?
Sean. Would it be more impactful to define what the actions are and then assign a penalty according to those actions? To reverse it and take.
Would that be a lot of number? There's a lot of.
Well, if the issue is, if there's discretionary issue, then you have to remove the discretionary issue and define. Despite what a lot of it is, instead of just saying if a blanket 3 years is not appropriate, then XYZ gets 30 days, XYZ PDQ gets 90 days, LMNOP gets 1 year.
I understand what you're saying, but I think that would kind of be impossible because it's just
a lot of them.
It would be really hard to do.
You can't foresee what.
Yeah, good thought, though, on assessing the severity of it. You know, we're trying to accomplish to provide more latitude and not lock somebody out from this if it's a fairly minor thing and lock them out for 3 years. So what would you recommend, Scott, on how we accomplish this?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question because
yes,
I can't really recommend anything with regards to it. I can just provide sort of legal analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that in terms of the greatest discretion for the board, the issue of having it in your rule that if you've been in violation 3 years, you'll be unable to do this. If that's a rule, that becomes much more difficult or to work with in unique circumstances, as opposed to if it becomes a potential probationary term, that would give the board the most discretion in reviewing the individual circumstances. So somewhere in between the two, yeah, that's going to be the full range of, legally speaking, of options. the most restrictive for the board would be where it's a rule that if something's happened in 3 years, you can't do this. The least restrictive for the board would be the board may impose as a probationary requirement X, Y, or Z, including the individual cannot act as a parallel inspector.
Kind of liking that.
Yeah, because once again, the severity of the allegation or substantiation, rather, is going to be different for every case that comes in. Some inspectors might need 1 year probation, and another might need 3. Maybe another one might need 5, depending on what that allegation or substantiation is. What's found.
So part of discipline then, and remove it maybe from here.
Was put in here initially because of the 3 year requirement to be in the state for 3 years before you get parallel. Do you think that's why the 3 year?
The 3 years was a common thread. Yes. If a home inspector is on probation, as you say, from the board for any given time, is that would he be in good standing with the board during that probation, or would he have to wait for the probation period to be over before he's in good standing?
You're asking Scott.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking, who are you asking?
Scott. Well, Scott. He's got the legal mind.
Was that meant for me?
Yes, Scott. If a person is on probation with the board, is he would he be in good standing with the board during that probation period, or does he have to wait till after the board, after the probation, to be in good standing?
The question of good standing, typically, yes. If you're on probation, your license is in good standing because you're in a status in which you're able to practice. There are practice restrictions on you potentially, or you may have other requirements, but you're able to practice. If you are suspended, revoked, canceled, expired, you're not in good standing. Inactive, not in good standing. So it's really good standing. Probation is kind of the gray area, but you're in good standing in terms of you are able to practice. You just may have restrictions on that practice.
So what if letter B was changed to is not under any board-ordered practice restrictions?
I can go even further than that. I'd like to keep A and scratch B.
Because
if we kept A and scratched B completely,
then
and just have it as being good standing with the board.
There you go.
And not worry about any disciplinary action, because if he's currently under disciplinary action, he wouldn't be in good standing.
Technically, as long as you can perform your professional services, that you would be in good standing.
Right.
So if you're on probation, you're still able to do the work.
I'm still not too concerned about the violating section of B here, to be honest with you. I can understand some concerns, but if we're going to debate over 3 years, 2 years, 1 year, or any years, we'll try to change this whole thing to the discretionary of the board pending probation or whatever. I just assume scratch the line.
Well, Peter, then you're leaving
that. No,
that would leave it all up to disciplinary action then, right?
It would be all up to the board at that point.
It would be all up to a call made and disciplinary action. And maybe that's more than you guys want to bite off.
Can I say that sometimes you can have a probationary thing and say, okay, you need to do peer reviews, need to pay these fines. They do it in a month. Probation's over. Are you okay with that?
He learned his lesson.
So you want to make it a month?
No.
I'm just saying that you're thinking probationary periods, but you're maybe not thinking how long that could possibly be.
I understand that. In probation, okay, as a word, you're doing peer review. You need 3 peer reviews,
mm-hmm.
okay? Yes, that's a learning process.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, by the time you're done with those 3 peer reviews, I'll bet you $10 you're never going to make that mistake again.
Exactly.
Okay? So what's to stop you from taking that learning process and throwing it onto the people that you're peer reviewing and saying, hey, don't ever make this mistake. Okay, I did.
Not arguing against it, just making sure that we're on the same page of how the probationary period may not be a long period, and if it's not important to be a long period, at least everybody here is aware of that, how a probationary period may play out.
Well, okay. I have nothing else to say about that, unless you want to drop it to 1 year.
And you're concerned about losing it altogether, right?
Right. I'm saying maybe consider changing B to what Kurt's just put there, not beyond probation as a result of disciplinary action from the board, instead of just straight nothing for 3 years if you've had disciplinary action.
Because we define probation.
Well, probation is subjective, depending on what the board would say for probation.
That'll be
The board does use the word probation?
Yes, it goes into the board order.
All right, go ahead.
No, every probation is going to be different. Mm-hmm. You know, once again, you know, maybe he has to do, you know, 3 or 4 peer reviews and complete that. That's the term of his probation. So, you know, within a month, it's over with. The next guy, you know, that did something really bad, whatever that might be, you know, ends up, you know, the term of his probation is not going to be parallel inspections for 3 years. So it's going to be different.
I don't know if they could specify that specifically. Basically, it would be that the board would have to put it in the actual period, or you have to complete these tasks or else you're going to be in probation. That's what the probationary period is. It's not you can't do anything for 3 years. It's just if you don't do it, then other consequences will happen. And as soon as you complete these tasks, the peer reviews, pay the fees, you're no longer under probationary.
Probation could include practice restriction.
But it's how can you practice restrict something that doesn't exist? It's under.
Because it doesn't exist as a thing. That's
so, Judith, what are you recommending we do on B? What are you recommending we do on B?
I'm not sure.
Well, we can leave it for a discussion next time. We can heave it here if you guys want to think. Because remember, the A, B, and C, there's going to be an acknowledgement by the supervising inspector that they, you know, fill out saying, "I acknowledge I'm in good standing. I acknowledge." You know, you could be, I'm not on probation currently, and I acknowledge that I've done I've been a home inspector for 3 years. So whatever goes here is going to probably be part of whatever acknowledgement. And so, again, the supervising inspector, do you want him to say acknowledge, I haven't received disciplinary action in the preceding 3 years, or do you want him to acknowledge, I'm not currently under probation?
I like what's in that box.
And that could be wordsmithed a lot better than that, too. So,
I'm thinking we ought to move away from B.
You want to leave it at 3, huh?
Well, unless someone has a better suggestion, I think we're going to be coming back to B.
But you like the part about limiting it to the standards of practice.
To the standards, yes. Okay.
Well, we'll leave it there. Again, you guys may not even want to do this whole package right now and just do the easier package, but it's good have this.
I'm really concerned with C, what we're writing in C.
That was a new thing, just discussion, and I want to propose it yet again because...
Well, we've got some people here that might have some comments on C, and I believe this is what they've been waiting for. We have, it says the inspector shall... is it okay? Any problems with moving on? Hearing none. The inspector shall have been continuously certified by the board as a home inspector for at least 3 years or have conducted at least 1,000 fee-paid home inspections in any jurisdiction as certified, registered, or licensed home inspector.
So, flaw I'm seeing right there all of a sudden is continuously certified by the board. Do we need...
That's the current language.
Right. At least 3 years, should we say... working in this state, or do we need anything like that to clarify your original intent was?
Well, the supervising inspector means an Arizona certified home inspector.
Okay.
And that's the very tippity top. So this applies, your Arizona certified home inspector, and then you also need these 3.
So we've heard so much, Peter, about broadening this. That's why...
For out-of-state inspections, right.
Well, just, there's people who, you know, they could be a home inspector for a year and have done so many home inspections. I guess like in my bubble, can it be assumed that if an HI has completed X number of home inspections, they are veteran enough to train candidates? And that's the question I have.
Because the possibility.
Yeah.
beyond just that 3 year.
And obviously, you can't ask for them to show you proof of 1,000 fee paid home inspections. Again, all of this is a part of that acknowledgement that they're giving us their word. You know, it's obviously the 3 years is easier because we can look at what their grant date was and we can verify, yes, you have been certified for 3+ years here in Arizona. And I think that's why they've always kind of stayed away from acknowledging a specific number. It's usually been the 3 years and you've done 250 home inspections, which seemed arbitrary because how do you prove it?
Right.
So this is something for you guys to consider. You know, who is qualified to teach home inspector candidates? Is it based solely on the 3 years certified with the board, or is there something else that can determine that, like them saying, I've done X number of home inspections?
What do you guys think? After 1,000 inspections, even if you had not been licensed with a fully licensed in the last 3 years, but 1,000 inspections, you're starting to figure it out.
You better be, right?
And that's just a number I picked out of there. So.
Keith.
Even with 1,000 inspections, it doesn't, without training, it doesn't make the inspector qualified to do parallels. Again, we're missing the whole picture here, I personally believe. You get a guy that does 1,000 inspections from out of state, he comes in, right? Now he can do it, but he's not compliant or doesn't understand our standards that well. Every time I go to an EAC meeting, it's a report issue. And the report issue is because they aren't trained properly during parallels.
Yeah, I have to say that one of the things that we want to
do. The burden should be on the post-secondary department. If you want to do parallel inspections, be post-secondary certified. That's all you got to do.
How do you feel?
I second that with Keith.
Post-secondary certified is what?
Second that.
And who are you?
Dylan. Okay. Dylan, member of the public.
Okay.
Well,
so Dylan agrees with you.
We both have inspection schools, so yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A question I have, maybe for Scott, can we dictate, without it being a statutory, actual, registered something, can we dictate that in rule alone and that suffice?
Well, you do it for the school training. You got to be post-secondary certified for the school.
It's a school for home inspectors, not a school to train parallel.
But that's part of education. That's my point. Somehow we got divided.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I'm just saying it should be its own certification. You're a home inspector, and for another, whatever, $50 a year, you get a registration as a parallel if you qualify for these things. And I'm part of that is you taking this training and whatever else that's required to make sure that I'm really not disagreeing with you.
Okay. I wanted to bring up also part of the choice between the small rule package and the large rule package is the discussion of creating the parallel inspector certification. That would require statute. If you were to actually have that go through and become a thing, the rules that we are creating right now would probably be null and void. And so it might be better to pursue. You need to pursue that, define it before, and then come back to the rules afterwards to kind of mesh together. Because again, it's top down, statute's higher up than the rule.
Okay, let me interrupt you for a minute. If we were to run down the road of going to the schools for supervising inspectors, that has a lot of ramifications because we're now taking the peer reviewer and the parallel inspector into the supervising inspector category. So now if you want to send a gentleman for parallels strictly to the schools, okay, then are we sending our peer reviewers strictly to the schools as well?
We don't know yet.
I question what Keith is saying about the advantage. The greatest advantage for a parallel inspector, for an applicant, a candidate, is to go to the schools for their parallels. I've always thought that because they have the benefit of repetition, if nothing else, so that they can understand. But when it comes to peer review, are we going to be asking a person who's under disciplinary action to go to the schools to do his peer reviews if we were to run down that road?
Well, I don't think that's what they're saying.
And is it fair to the rest of the home inspectors in the industry to pull them completely out of parallels and peer review?
I would say that it has nothing to do with the schools. the schools are not part of it. What it would be is a separate certification. A whole new statute has to be created. It's going to say, this is a parallel or a supervising inspector. These are the qualifications you need to send us an application, a fee. There might be a renewal cycle.
But we haven't even begun to write that rule.
Correct. And that's not even a rule.
I'm talking about on C right here now. You know, what we have written so far. And I just wanted to explore going through the schools to see what those ramifications would have been. If you are intending to change the rules so that now we have to pay a fee to be a home inspector and then pay another fee to be a supervisor.
That's not in this rule, though.
That's not there yet. Not there.
It can't be there because there's no statute yet.
Right. So
the question is, do we want to pursue that? I mean, do we want to do that? Do we want to, you know, put more restraints on...
More responsibility.
Because... I don't know.
Home inspectors, you know,
that want to be supervisors.
That want to be supervising inspectors.
Can I make a comment?
Of course.
Please.
This is Dave Schwartz, and I wanted to just point out a ramification, and that is that, you know, the parallel, that would make it so that the inspector who wants to work or is living in Sholo is in big trouble. You know, he's going to have to be traveling, which is what we tried to avoid. We tried to expand our reach with the parallels. And beyond that, the expertise of being trained by potentially someone in the area or in a nearby town in the high country of Arizona is far better than some school where they're teaching you how to inspect Phoenix houses. So
can I think about that. Can I say something to kind of go along with that, Mr. Schwartz?
Is that Dylan again?
Speak.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So I started Arizona Parallel Inspections in January of 2022 with the idea to create a centralized company and platform to bring inspectors, parallel inspectors, and students together all on the same calendar. And we have done that. It has been successful so far. I have inspectors in Lake Havasu City, Prescott, Sholo, Flagstaff, Phoenix, and I'm constantly looking for inspectors in other areas to employ them. So to go along with the rebuttal that was, the schools will be taking away from the industry or from the other inspectors that want to be instructors. I feel we're doing the opposite. I want to create a centralized platform, a standardized platform, and a standardized certification would be nice, now that I'm hearing that, for my company, Arizona Parallel Inspections, to use for our instructors and our students to have standards.
So, Mr. Chairman, I know we're a little bit off topic on 3C here. I know we've kind of expanded that to do we create a separate program. I think that item needs to be separately agendized and we need to take a close look at it. I don't know that we want to bite off on whether or not we want a separate certification for supervising inspector discussion. I'm not sure we want to have that right now, unless you do. But I think we can try to hone back in on 3C and what we want to do with that.
I'm with you on that. We are straight. Okay, back to 3C. We got the 3 years in here once again. And or conducted at least 1,000 fee-paid home inspections in a jurisdiction. That's all done on an attestation, right?
Correct. And now we'll get to that further down as well.
Okay. Anyone have any problems with 3C? Yes, sir.
I just have a question. I know, I mean, I have experience with Arizona, but states like Idaho, where you don't have to have any sort of registration licenses to be a home inspector, if they were to move here with plenty of experience, they wouldn't be able to, correct, because they're not certified?
That's correct.
Right. Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, I guess you could say the reason for that is to show to our the rules council that, you know, we're still protecting the public.
Yeah, come from a licensed state, things like that will count from other states, but unlicensed states. What about, I'm sorry, one more thing. They've been an ASHI member in Idaho for 3 years, or they're registered with one of our organizations, InterNACHI, ASHI, something else like that, and they have their 1,000, they move. Do those organizations count for them?
Not how this is written, but that's not something I've ever thought about. What do you look to do that?
That's an interesting idea. I think we're looking kind of towards how, like, the universal licensure is written,
yeah.
You know, and it relies on you being registered or licensed in another state.
Yeah.
I've never seen something like that. I'm going to think about it.
Cool.
I don't know.
I've written a note to tie on to see is we need to then consider disciplinary action in the other states that they were licensed in.
Oh, good point.
Currently, how it's written, it would not, because from the board.
Right. Good point.
If you took out the board and left, well, no. Yeah.
You don't want to open it too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that would get back more into initial licensing, right?
Yeah. They're already licensed and everything at this point.
Right.
They're already certified.
Right.
And if we change it to the probationary bit, again, yeah. We're not certified.
You could add at the end of C, the very end, with no disciplinary action, with no pending disciplinary action. Because I think that's how universal is like, no pending disciplinary action.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be handled in the application?
Yeah.
I mean, by the time you got to this point, wouldn't all that be settled? But,
but things have changed after initial
not for
application.
The supervising inspector.
Evaluating them for supervising inspector.
It would be if that was its own
time of application.
Registration.
I still think that it would have been taken care of. Because if he's applying and he had that problem, it would be disclosed. Okay? In the last...
it wouldn't be disclosed if they were coming from Idaho.
Well... They would be.
And they were applying.
They would have. They have to give us everything when they apply. I would say this person is certified.
Not if it was a
non-licensed.
Right. I mean,
non-licensed.
It would be just
something that wasn't criminal
by an
you
applicant who was applying for certification, but we're looking at for a supervising inspector, so they wouldn't disclose that to us necessarily when they're doing parallels.
No, this is them acknowledging, like, I'm currently not under, we're assuming that we want to go with the probationary period. And what they're doing outside of Arizona, do we care about that at that time since they're already certified here? Are they doing home inspections in other states unless they're, like, on the border or something? Do we care about other registrations if they're an arm agent in California or something? Like, do we care what happens to that for this? I feel like it should just be narrowed down on what our board's currently doing with them.
One more thing. So it's 3 years and... 10 inspections, it's not the 250 anymore, it's just a 3 years total license or 1,000 inspections, there's no more requirements on the 3 years.
That's what they're proposing.
But they don't have to have any inspections in that 3 years to
do
parallels.
Still stay 250.
Or if you got, I don't know.
So
that's like, I was talking to somebody yesterday,
three years
and 250, that's 6 a month. If they did 6 every month, and that's not a lot either.
It's not a lot.
So maybe 250.
That's why they need.
And what's to stop a person from coming in here, getting certified in Arizona, and then not coming back for 5 or 6 years? I mean, and you kept the certification going, but never moved here.
And if it's not in there, I mean, and something goes south, you're like, well, there's nothing that said I had to.
Right.
Training.
It's a scary situation.
Yeah, certification would relieve all of these questions.
Well. All right.
So do you want that on C as for as a home inspector for at least 3 years? I conducted 250 inspections, or and then go on with the rest. Do you want that there or not? It's not there right now.
It is 3 years and completed 250 home inspections.
Yeah.
I think it would be wise to put it back, put it in there, and then put the OR in for the 1,000 fee paid.
Yeah, I think the 1,000, the 1,000 fee paid option makes sense. right, mm-hmm. for supervising.
Yeah, but that's from that's really set for people coming in from elsewhere.
Right, right, exactly.
But if we put it in, it would be that we were a home inspector for at least 3 years in Arizona with 250 feet paid home inspectors.
Right.
You want to make that
for the other option? Yeah. But that's not a lot.
It's not a lot.
Talked about 250.
But if we were to say, if we were to make that 1,000, I think the whole world would blow up.
No. Yeah. I don't actually.
Yes.
I mean, I would argue that the person who's been licensed for 3 years and only completed 250 inspections is unqualified.
Is unqualified?
250 is not a lot. Okay. You may not have run across a federal Pacific panel more than twice.
Mm-hmm. Take the three-year time out and just put completed 1,000 inspections,
achievement.
Whether you're here or coming from somewhere else.
I mean, the 1,000 feet paid home inspections is more of an achievement than just having your license. That costs you $150.
Or completed training.
So why not? Maybe, what if you make it the same? You know, 1,000, either way.
I have no problems with that.
So basically it's just that you've conducted 1,000.
But it's a trust issue, I understand that.
Yeah, well, a lot of things are.
But the 3 years is a term for disciplinary action with the board. Okay, we don't want to drop that. You have to...
That's above there, I think you're...
That's well covered, you think?
Right, yeah, because...
I've been continuously certified by the board as a home inspector and completed 1,000 fee paid home inspections.
So it'd be... is certified by the board...
It's currently up here. It means an Arizona certified home inspector.
Yeah.
So it already says that at the top.
Oh.
They're just this is
oh,
what.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, shall have completed 1,000 fee paid home inspections. In the state, or do you just like combine the whole thing so it's just like whether you're here or from somewhere else, the bottom line is you've done 1,000 home inspections.
So we're allowing some of the 1,000 to be out-of-state inspections, is that right?
That's what we're saying.
Okay, it should be, right. So therefore, we have to adjust the certified, registered, because
right.
not all states are have licensing, right? So we have to adjust that language if we're going to allow Montana that may not be licensed for them to count some of those towards 1,000.
And again, this is not for certification. This is just to act as a supervising.
Right, right. So therefore, we can't necessarily say certified, registered. We could say practicing, whatever. But we
just
can't
matters
so
what you want.
Licensing,
like,
if we want to include all states, unless we want to limit it to licensed states.
Yeah, I know.
Well, reciprocity, or whatever we're calling it nowadays, is pending. Equal or greater.
Well, that's universal. That's a different thing, and that mm-hmm. doesn't apply to
supervising.
So, to be a supervisor, you could just chunk out that middle part and say, have conducted at least 1,000 fee paid home inspections in any jurisdiction. Boom. If you don't want it to matter if they're coming from Idaho or California.
Yeah.
And maybe that just any jurisdiction, we leave it at that. You know, we want to make sure they've been practiced.
U.S. jurisdiction.
Other home inspectors. And
so you want to...
I'm just throwing that up.
Yeah, I understand. You want to scratch have been continuously certified by the board?
So.
And just make it have conducted at least 1,000 fee paid home inspections in any jurisdiction?
And so I just want to point out that...
options, right? We want the or, right?
Do we want the or?
Yeah. I think we do.
Well, I thought that they're saying that it's a better quantifier to say they've done 1,000 inspections than it is to just say you've been registered with the board for 3 years.
Oh, so just remove that altogether.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Kurt.
Well, I know the rule was initially created some years ago specifically because there wasn't any qualifier. You would just become certified and poof, you were a parallel inspector at that time. And so I think they put in a time because they didn't want somebody who was just immediately certified.
That was the problem. You know, getting a certification and teaching the very next day. You had a question?
Yeah, I just I wanted to interject a little bit, because I think that there's somebody, what we haven't defined is what a qualified person is. And I apologize, I'm sure this has been beat to death, and I'm new. But 3 years and 750 could be a qualified person, 500 could be a qualified person, but that without that achievement of 1,000 negates a lot of other qualified people if they're not in that three-year term. Because I came from out of state. I initially had a home inspection business in Hawaii where there's no licensing requirements, and I tried to start a business, or I did start a business, and I couldn't train people that worked with me. And so that was the designation that was important to me, because I had conducted, I had a multi-inspector firm in Hawaii, I could personally conducted over 3,000 inspections, and I couldn't do anything. So I think the or is certainly important, but I also think the first part is partially important as well, but maybe it's 250 just isn't a lot to me.
So is it that important?
And there's a possibility for training, and like, you're over here.
So is the 3 years important to you? This is really the question.
I would have achieved the ability to train parallel people, and I had people that worked on my team that I couldn't personally train. I had to send them elsewhere to train. But I hit that achievement of 1,000 in less than 3 years.
Personally. You mean to train just to do parallels?
Just
you
to do.
You can train everything else.
No, yeah, of course you can train. But I couldn't. Right. People would call me and say, hey, we'd like to come work on your team. And I'd say, well, you have to go to another establishment and then learn whatever they learn. Then you have to come back and then learn our way, too. So it's an added cost and an establishment, up to $3,000 elsewhere.
Right, right.
Let's think about that for the next 10 minutes. Okay?
Must be a break.
And take a break. Okay?
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay? We're back in session.
We're done.
At 11:08. I want to, we're talking about supervising inspectors, which now would encompass peer reviewers as well as parallel inspectors. And we're debating semantics here as far as I'm concerned. What do we really want from our supervising inspector as far as qualifications go? We're talking 250 home inspections, which are talking 1,000 inspections, we're talking 3 years. What exactly are we looking to accomplish? And we should write the rules accordingly, okay? Do we want the home inspector to have done 1,000 inspections?
That seems more logical than just saying you're registered for 3 years.
Okay, so let's start there. Let's start with 1,000 inspections, whether he be in-state certified or certified in a other jurisdiction, all right?
Now, do you want to Sean's point there coming from a jurisdiction that did not have registration? Does that matter to you that they're coming from a jurisdiction with registration, licensure, or just not? I don't know. Just
Go ahead.
Just in my experience, we carried trade organization, so we were InterNACHI certified and ASHI certified as well. So we went in accordance with standards, but it's not required.
Not everybody.
And my experience with other states, New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, is that they don't certify, or hadn't back then, but ASHI was a big thing, and so was International NACHI. The associations were governing and setting the standards, and this is what we do here with the state now. So, personally, I don't care if they were certified or not. If they did 1,000 home inspections and stayed out of trouble, that might be enough.
Certified here, they would have had to pass the national exam.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned that someone might have done 1,000 inspections in Bangor, Maine, and then they come here and they see slab on grade, and they've never seen this stuff before. I realize that's an aberration, but this could set us up for someone coming from out of state that has no feel for our housing stock at all, and they haven't, and they're ready to teach.
Yeah, but you can put that in reverse. I mean, you can go into Pennsylvania and have never seen an oil burner before. If you come from Arizona, I mean, I don't think that The national exam actually covers both of those.
Oh, no,
problems.
I know.
You know? Yeah, of course you know. And even our schools cover
yes.
all those. They cover gas, oil, you know, electric as far as heating goes, and foundations, slab on grade, crawl spaces, et cetera. So I don't see that as a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to need experience, but to be perfectly honest with you, coming here to a slab on grade is a lot easier than leaving here from a slab on grade and going to a full foundation.
Yeah. You know, Keith, let me ask you, your company's done a ton of parallels. What do you think about simply no restriction on time, but just 1,000 inspections from anywhere, and you can teach parallels? I know you want training. That's a different discussion.
That's D.
Okay.
Gosh. I don't know. You're going to have the experience with 1,000 inspections. But again, it's all about report writing. You know, how do you ensure that?
Training. Yeah.
In school.
Yeah, as long as that inspector or the supervising inspector is a certified inspector through the state of Arizona, I don't have a problem.
Right. Well, he can't be a supervising inspector without first being a certified Arizona
right.
inspector.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, that's
so as long as that doesn't go away, I can support that.
How is it going to affect the parallel inspectors that are in schools, for instance, right now? Do they all have 1,000 inspections, you think, under their belt?
Good point. Yes.
Okay. Because when we were fighting GERC the last time over the time and inspections, some of these gentlemen were just under the 3 years. Did we drive that to 2 years? I can't remember.
No, you went plus five.
Three
you wanted five.
Three from five. Mm-hmm. Some of the inspectors were under 5 years. In the 5 years' time, we can assume they did 1,000 inspections?
The three-year time, my crew does. Yeah, they've got it. And I'm sure most of them do.
Okay.
But
so that was my only concern, is what do we do to the industry as it stands right,
right.
now?
Yeah.
Right. Insofar as the school is offering parallels.
Yeah.
All right. I'm all for changing it to just amount of inspections.
Have conducted at least 1,000 prepaid home inspections in any jurisdiction.
In any jurisdiction.
Yep. I'm okay with that as it's written. With the or. Yeah.
But
the or can go with
you
the
don't,
top of the
Yeah, you don't need the or
line,
anymore.
Just 1,000. Right. I'm sorry.
In any jurisdiction.
Right.
Period. No certified, no registered, no license. Comments? David? Did we lose David Swartz?
I'm sorry, I was on mute and trying to get to it. I guess the only thing is, it does exclude those in the outlying areas. I know there was talk of 250, not sounding like much, but those people in the outlying areas probably spend more time on site, and at 250, or at 1,000, they're just not going to get there, So it is what it is.
Yeah, they'll just be more experienced.
They may not have 1,000. It'll take them a long time to get there.
So that's a good argument for 3 years and 500.
How does the board confirm that the parallel instructor would have those 1,000?
We don't confirm. It's just an it's just an attestation on that.
Yeah, they'd have to sign something
saying that they did it. And then if you lie on an application and something happens,
go to jail.
That's another issue.
It'd be pretty hard to kind of catch somebody saying,
So as Andrew was saying, maybe we do need a 3-year period to accommodate those in the outlying areas. 3 years or 1,000 inspections.
There you go. Sorry.
That's my thought, too. Because they might be highly qualified at 250. It's very, very possible.
This goes back to the, transferring it to the responsibility of the schools. I applied for my Arizona Board of Vibrant Full Secondary Education in January, and it was granted. Arizona entity that board requires us to have it as a part of our curriculum as a licensed school in Arizona, I think we have a, you know, like Keith kind of said, I think it would be important for us to have knowledge and understanding and, you know, of the requirement and the standard and whether it be an actual certification.
Actually, I could look into that, but I don't think that they require you to have it. But if you're offering it, then you have to supply the curriculum to
Correct.
Private post-secondary.
Right.
It's not a requirement that you – they're going to dictate what you offer, but if you do offer
right.
it, you got to submit your curriculum.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So that sounds like a good justification. I'm thinking of like what it would be like to stand before GERC and say why it is what it is, the 3 years, or to me that sounds like a good justification.
So if we would like this to have been continually certified by the board as a home inspector for at least 3 years, or have conducted at least 1,000 paid home inspections in any jurisdiction. Sean?
Shouldn't the 3 years have a qualifier, because we've established that in 3 years you could do zero inspections
of some sort? The uncompleted 250, I think, should just be added there. This little bottom bits and then...
Okay, so now we're back to have been continuously certified by the board as a home inspector for at least 3 years and have performed at least 250 home inspections or have conducted at least 1,000 free home inspections in any jurisdiction.
Okay.
What?
Do
you think so?
Yeah. Well, we're approaching everything from different directions. It's covering it all.
Well, this will, if we include the 250 home inspections and the 3 years, well, the 250 home inspections, that'll keep a person who's been certified for 3 years but hanging out in Hawaii, you know, from getting certified, becoming a certified inspector. And then the 1,000 and the 200, the 3 years will satisfy the outlying areas, and the 1,000 would satisfy all home inspectors that think they know what they're doing coming from out of state. Any other comments?
I like the minimum 250, but maybe, you know, we can probably just clean this up, Kurt, I think, right?
I will, and I apologize that my Word version
I
can't find it for whatever reason.
Oh, that's okay.
I clearly had a Word version that I created a PDF from, and I cannot find it.
So what are you changing from the original? Because the original says 250. That's all you do is adding 1,000 then. That's it.
And taking off as certified, registered, or licensed home inspector from the end of that paragraph.
Oh, okay.
Just
make sure.
Right.
You happy?
I'm always happy.
All right, we'll see how that flushes out, and we'll move on to...
Let's just move on. I don't know what you guys wanted.
We have...
this is like the beginning of this whole thing.
The reviewer has been stricken completely because he's now... We're trying to turn him into a supervising inspector. And we're at 4. Report checker supplement. Nothing's changed there except definitions. And we've been filling out a completing home inspection report. And we're moving down to home inspector certification. We dumped A. You rewrote A down here?
So working with Deanie Ray AAG, she says usually when you put a rules package in and you have lots of strikes and additions and reorganizing a specific rule, the best route is to actually just strike the entire thing and start anew.
Okay,
and so
there it is.
So striked all of 247.
And start on the third page at A. An applicant for initial certification as a home inspector shall submit a complete application that contains the following. Nothing's changed there. Oh, wait a minute. That's all. Your underline without a highlight mean you just brought it over.
Yeah, the comment just saying that this did the strike through and we just rewrote.
Right, nothing's changed there.
Well, you did change A from an original completed, wasn't it?
The application.
And then you made it completed or something, minor.
Yeah, just, okay. Just if you just give us an application that's not complete,
yeah.
It's not. Okay. Yeah, because you're not going to see the changes how this is put out. Right. It's all new language.
Yeah. Okay, now we're down to A.
So this is all what we've had before.
A9. I've been getting feedback on the fingerprint card, and I've got people that are asking me why.
Well, it's current right now. When you do your initial application, you give it to us right now. That's nothing new.
Yeah, but I got
clearance card.
Okay, then maybe I'm bringing this up too soon.
For the renewal, yeah.
Yeah, that's
in
too soon.
Renewal, people are asking why.
Yeah.
Because it's very common in any profession that's...
There's no reason to these guys. What they're saying is you have to have a reason as to create a rule. You have to have a reason, something that rule is going to prevent.
Protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public. How are we protecting health? No, it's not.
They're not buying that either.
And the auditors, when we go into a sunset audit, are going to say, how are you protecting the public? You asked for this once upon initial licensure, and that's not in line with every other occupational profession. It should be maintained a valid fingerprint clearance card. I mean,
what other professions require that?
Our alarm agents. Alarm agents.
Who else?
Teachers.
For our board.
Architects. Engineers. Surveyors.
I'm telling you,
what's happening is that the industry right now, when they got wind of this fingerprint card, are saying, why do I have to go through that trouble? It's not a day expense.
Same reason you go through an FA.
When you can't present to me, I couldn't present to them, a reason why.
You don't feel like a reason why is protecting the public to have a valid fingerprint clearance card?
Not unless we can show a detriment to the public by not having that.
That'd be scary.
The Elmo doll guy.
Hmm?
Yeah, Elmo doll guy. You just don't want bad people going into your home. And the fingerprint clearance card is just one small step to ensure that the people going into your home when you're not around are vetted in some sort of government... way to say that they are not felons, pretty much.
They have no history.
Yeah.
The question being asked to me is, how many cases are there with the Arizona Home Inspectors where somebody got in trouble because they didn't have a fingerprint card, or went in and robbed the house or did something like that? Do we have any examples I can present to these people?
That's ridiculous to say that
we want to look for
disciplinary action occurred because the person didn't have a fingerprint clearance card. I mean, there's going to be bad actors, and you do all your due diligence, everything, use the tools in your toolbox that are available to try to prevent bad actors.
So this is due diligence.
Protect the public.
So we want to have a fingerprint clearance card requirement for due diligence.
I mean, I have...
For us doing our due diligence.
Hey, talk to Scott. I bet this reduces your liability as a state agency.
Yeah, because currently right now, you basically tell us everything that's happened anyways, every renewal. You wouldn't be asked anymore if you had a fingerprint clearance card, because we would just wait for it to automatically go off. If you do something, your fingerprint clearance card, ding, something happens, and we are told by DPS, it's immediate. How does that not help protect the public if it's immediate instead of waiting a whole year for you to tell us, possibly, that it occurred?
We're asking the questions because we've never had this requirement, and now we're putting this requirement on licensed home inspectors. Well, we need to justify it to the inspectors. Yeah. Did you bring that up at your meeting?
I think that we did, actually, I did not get any huge negative pushback from anybody when I explained what I just said. It's logical.
And again, that's just... because I don't want us to go down a rabbit hole here, that would have to be a statutory change. Currently, statute does not allow that. It's very specific that it's not allowed, and that would require a statute change. This is not new language with getting it.
It's not allowed. It's just not in there. It wasn't ever written in
it's
there.
Not. It's very specific. I can read it.
Okay, you're right.
We don't need to go there.
All right, just know.
Just a heads up.
Okay.
There will be people that will object to this.
It's fine.
It's mine.
To any change that you make anywhere.
When it's under public review.
So
I feel confident that that's an easy one. It's either you want to be certified and you want this, or if you don't and you want to go with the people that don't want you to be certified anymore and have everybody go to Yelp to find out if you're a good home inspector and no certification, then yeah. There's that option.
Well, if they give you the axe when they do the sunset review.
Question. This is Dave Schwartz. Is this the one that demands that it be a digital fingerprint card?
To be frank, I don't know if it requires digital to get a fingerprint clearance card. That's usually the easier way to do it. I went to a photo shop. They had it, and you put your fingerprints into a digital, and that's sent to DPS. Then I received my fingerprint clearance card. Whether that's the only route you can take and whether you can do an actual ink, I'm not sure, but that could be a possibility.
The question, I guess, I'm just concerned about digital privacy. I mean, we struggle with breaches in data all the time throughout all different businesses and government agencies, and now we're going to not only have all of our existing data at risk, but now we're going to have our fingerprints at risk.
You know what? It's actually much safer than the way it used to be, where you had to submit a fingerprint actual card to an agency and had it hang on to you. I mean, this is done through DPS. BTR doesn't have anything to do with it. We're not collecting any digital prints or cards or physical prints or anything else. It's done through DPS.
Yeah. And he's already in the system.
How? I don't know. It just, the security, everybody says it's so much more secure than somebody else's, and you hear that all the time, and it just happens to be proven wrong all the time.
Well,
it is a concern, and therefore we know there will be people talking about that item.
Well, that's fine. And it might not be in, again, this rule package is not going to have, it might not have anything, because, again, the statute really prevents it, and you need that statute to change before it actually can occur.
Okay, good. Let's move down to 11, where we do have a comment that says, does report writing need to be added? Okay, so this is evidence of successful completion of 84 hours of classroom training, blah, 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 post-secondary education, distance education, blah, accrediting in the United States, blah, the Department of Ed. A course study shall encompass all of the following, being our 11 areas of concern, and the question is, should report writing be added to those 11 areas of concern?
Or can it even be? I don't know. This question came up because of being at the AZ ASHI and having individuals come up to me who, one gentleman just said, like, I'm done doing parallel inspections. They come to me out of the school. I don't know what schools, what programs they've done. He didn't specify, but he just said, they come to me, they have no software, they have no clue, and I'm trying to, you know, help these guys, but his assumption was that the school is supposed to teach that before coming to him, like the report writing and stuff. Which I don't know if that's correct or not, but it's like there's this
home inspector who was doing parallels.
The parallel inspector
after the 84 hours.
So yeah, so the student comes to him, and the student basically has no knowledge of how to write a report, doesn't have any software, things of that nature. But I'm asking the question because there's
we get a lot of feedback on that one.
A lot of people who just like, I mean, we got a parallel inspection recently that was completely handwritten from an applicant, and
nothing wrong with that.
Certainly. Yep. It's about the minimum standards, not the format or any software that you use. But there's definitely, is there a want that, like, whose responsibility is it? I don't know. And I'm just curious, whose responsibility is it to do the report writing? Is it both? Is it
if
one?
I can interject. The idea of the 30 parallels was report writing.
Okay.
Report writing, what's the word I'm looking for? Discipline, not discipline, but how you conduct yourself in the field, how you deal with the homeowners, how you deal with the buyers, how you deal with the agents. This is all done in parallel inspections. When I was teaching at Phoenix College Home Inspections,
these people knew nothing, and we would talk about report writing, and I told them that before they went to find a parallel inspector, even though we did eventually add that program, they needed to come up with a report, all right? We either buy a report, create a report, or steal a report, whatever they did, all right? Well, otherwise, they were not going to be able to do their parallel inspections. I'm assuming the schools that are represented here today are offering parallel inspections, all right, and teaching these gentlemen how to, and ladies, how to come up with reports. But these post-secondaries may not be, okay? If they're not doing parallels, all you got to do is pass these 11 areas of concern and not have a clue as to put it all together.
The online classes are like that.
So what I'm hearing is that it shouldn't be added here. The responsibility really for how reports are written and stuff is kind of on the parallel inspector.
I'm not saying it shouldn't be here because that is, from the enforcement advisory position, the worst violation that we have to face is that they don't know how to write reports. Okay?
Yeah.
And they saw what they saw but didn't write it down properly. All right? So I'm not saying it shouldn't be here. I'm just saying that... If a person comes to me for a parallel inspection, I want to be the last leg of the three-legged stool. I want the education, the test, and him ready to walk out there and write a report.
I think it'd be great to have it.
In this current area, is professional practice, is that just the ethics? What's under professional practice right now?
I don't think it's really defined.
It's not defined? Okay.
We never defined professional practice?
I don't think for this specific...
Because there's the standard ethics. Yeah, all BPR registrants have to follow. I thought that might have been under that, but...
It might encompass all of
that. Well, hang on. Before you go further, what are you teaching in professional ethics?
It is. It's the standards. It's the ASHI standards that we follow and also ethics that the state put out.
Okay, so the standards... is report writing, right? What you need to have in your report, right? Your components and your findings, right?
Yeah, but we go in farther, you go into further detail as you approach each subject, you break it down into how to write that report for that subject.
Right.
Online courses don't necessarily do that, so
yeah,
it'd be good to put that in there under, you know, just...
Can we add that into professional practice / report writing?
No, I'd just make it its own letter.
Okay.
I would just add it if you wanted it added.
Another item?
Yeah.
I think that could really help violations. It really could.
That result in school the principals. Well, I don't. You know what? I know. As a follow up, we need to talk to private post secondary education. That would be added to
the curriculum. Yeah, any changes are kind of big to all the providers, so we need to make sure that they make sense.
Although, it seems like that shouldn't be like a big change.
It shouldn't be, right? If you're doing it right. If you're doing it right. But if it's a separate designation on there, then it's more formal now. It's formalized.
Yeah. Right, and they're going to have to produce curriculum to submit. So.
Yeah.
Well.
And it shouldn't be specific to the software, though. It should be... I mean, you're going to teach it with some kind of software platform, but you should be able to hit the standards on any platform, on, you know, HomeGauge or HIP or any of that.
Right.
I don't know. I kind of like it. Yeah,
I think it's great.
Okay. So this was just broken down because it was a single paragraph before, but now just kind of easier to read by breaking it down. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we couldn't put that in professional practice as a sub-note. Why we would have to add, we added swimming pools, so now we're at 12. Why we would have to add 13 areas of concern. When professional practice really doesn't have a definition.
It's a broad umbrella. We could use it. I don't see why not. We could use professional practice.
But on the other side of the coin...
Well, it's already there and you're not getting it.
You need to break down what professional practice is.
Yeah.
Well, we need to define it. We haven't defined it, obviously.
We could define professional practice. Hang on, Andrew. But on the other side of the coin, like you're saying, if they're teaching this and it's still a problem, maybe it would be better to put it in bold letters as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew?
Just a reminder, the national exam also asks, and in their books, you know, they have a chapter devoted to professional responsibilities, and 12% of their questions are from those two chapters. So there's a good amount of information in the national exam that we already all have to take in Arizona devoted to some of that stuff. Whether or not all the classes teaches a section on that, that's different, but it is in the books, and it is on the test.
There's some stuff in the curriculum. Some stuff on that, yeah.
And yet they're still dropping the ball on it.
Well, that always happens, right? But, yeah, defining professional practice might be interesting.
Would anybody, short of defining professional practice, would anybody be adverse to adding the 13th category, the 13th area of concern being report writing? You like that idea? There's another like. Mr. Schwartz?
Yeah.
There's another like. Dylan? Or was it Dylan?
Yeah.
He had a meeting at 11:30, so he probably dropped out.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Dave, were you there?
He went to the same meeting.
Okay, Kurt, you want to add that?
Oh, I did, just to the right.
You can see there. Thank you.
Okay. 12, evidence of completion of 30 parallel inspections combined with the following requirements broken down for clarity. So you'll break this down for clarity, but not professional practice? All right. Each home inspection report... for each parallel shall meet the standards, the applicant shall retain each report, and the applicant shall list each parallel inspection on a log. Nothing's changed there, right? Okay. Number 13, assigned attestation from each supervising inspector acknowledging all of the following. Now, I didn't understand your comment on this one that says, for clarity and to reduce documents for submission to the board, one attestation encompassing three acknowledgments. What does that mean?
So currently there's basically two things that get turned in, right, Julie? You're basically signing off saying that this meets the standards, and you're also doing the attestation saying that I can be a parallel inspector.
No.
One.
No. There's just one. The notarized
one signature page. Right.
That, yeah, there's just one.
Well, it's listed in the current rules that they have to have something signed, but it might be just in the log is how we do it.
You're thinking of the, what do we call it, certificate of, like the evaluation log. Thing where they say that they're good.
Yeah.
That's separate. That's different.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's this This was kind of doing it all as one.
So what were the three?
The three acknowledgments are listed above. This is what we're going to hold them to.
The three acknowledgments.
Because this is what was used to be in the in the definition of parallel inspector that we scratched out, and I took that and put it here.
You're adding B then. B's the big change of it, right?
No, that's from the definition currently.
Oh, you had 10 days then is what you did.
Nope. Oh, that's how it is now. And I've had parallel inspectors tell me that's really burdensome. That's why I asked the question.
Oh.
So no change there on the attestation?
So assigned attestation, because right now, what is it currently? The affirmation or whatever that requires that
affidavit.
Darn an affidavit. That's what we don't want, is we don't want a notary.
We don't want, yeah.
And right now we need a separate affidavit for each parallel inspector, even if there was 30 of them. We need a separate one. Now, are we changing that?
This would not change that, no.
We're not changing that.
So, yeah. So basically, you would have... This single attestation does not require a notary, and it would just be saying that I can be a parallel inspector. That's how it is currently, but you're also saying that I return these to them timely, and I also, in each of these reports meets the minimum standards.
Okay.
So a reason that you would say that you would do it this way is because when I go further down to professional standards or professional conduct, now you have this, and then you can say if you can kind of hold them to the fire, basically, for it. And currently, because they are not a certified group, you have a more difficulty of holding them responsible for things or taking any action if it's not true or they, you know, did something wrong with the parallel inspection and so forth. So the point of this is really, you're signing that all of these are true down in the conduct. If it wasn't true, then we can get you for professional conduct.
Is that form going to need to be rewritten to reflect all changes?
Most certainly.
So what do you got a problem?
I'll be a ways down the road, so no problem, right?
All right. I don't see any problem with that.
So the current language just say that they have to do a turnaround of 10 days.
10 days.
Is that burdensome?
Okay, so the student should submit a written report. Sometimes they don't and keep asking for it. Right there, you're saying they have to. So, I mean, the burden is going to be on the student, but you might want to just state reports presented.
Who's certifying a parallel inspection as a supervising instructor without a report from the student?
Well, you got 30 of them coming in. Sometimes they'll just... Yeah, we don't let it happen. I mean, we keep telling them, hey, you got to submit the report. But there is situations where it might not be filled out completely, you know, things like that. So to take the burden out of the supervising inspector, though, it should state reports presented.
Well, it does. 10 days after the report submitted.
Not this one.
No. 10 days after the applicant submitted them for review.
You can't sign off on a parallel.
It doesn't say, it says... return each of the applicants logged parallel inspection reports. The logged parallel inspection reports are saying there's got to be 30 of them. There should be, but there are situations where it just doesn't happen. And you got to take it out of the supervising inspector because the student is the one that has to do that.
But it says that here that they submit.
The parallel inspector is going to... formerly known as parallel inspection.
Yeah.
Okay. Is supervising a home inspection, receiving a report, correcting the report, receiving the report with the corrections made by the candidate.
Correct.
And then certify. That's true? That parallel was good.
The idea of this whole thing is to have the student submit a report. Mm-hmm. 30 of them. There are times where you don't get all 30, is what I'm saying.
And
but there's nothing that says they have to submit all 30 to you, though. I mean, if they submit one.
It said shall or something.
Well,
it doesn't say must. And some of the students are kind of, hey, it said shall. I don't have to do it. And I said, well, if you want to get certified, you have to do it.
What are we talking about? I'm confused. It's just up here. They give the parallel, the reviewer, the report, and they have 10 days to give it back. I don't know. How am I not reading that right?
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Well, what he's saying...
I mean, I know what you're saying, but I don't understand why those would count. So, like, if you, I used you for 30, but I only submitted 28 reports to you, then you should only sign off on 28.
That's correct.
That's how I see it.
No, you... Well,
because it says the supervising inspector reviewed, analyzed...
All
corrected and returned each of the parallel inspection reports. And so if you, the supervising inspector, didn't review one of my 30 reports that I gave you or didn't give you, then that doesn't count in my head.
Right.
But see, you're signing off on the parallel log, right?
But
so
no,
you do that before you even get your report from them. So now you're getting all 30 are going to be all in the parallel log, all 30 are going to be signed.
Well, you're trying to cross out the ones you never got a report on.
You're not supposed to sign off unless you put your eyes on the report, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Right. That, that's what I would think too.
But I mean, this is the error. You're right. There should be responsibility on the the registrant, the trainee there, and ideally it's the supervising inspector's responsibility to say, if you don't send it to me, it ain't going to count.
Right.
It's not going to count towards your 30 if I don't get it by 10 days because that's in the rules. And,
well, but, no, no, no.
But now, no, you have to return it within 10 days.
I've turned it around within 10 days. Right. But this is still what the supervisory inspector is responsible for.
That's
so let's focus back on that, right?
Okay.
And I'm okay with it with the because we're currently at 10 days, which is more than enough time to turn around in parallel.
Oh, yeah, that's
not too much time, frankly. It should be 2 days, ideally, because, you know.
Well, unless you're doing 30.
Yeah.
You know, you got a whole school going.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. But no, 10 days.
And again, to clarify, this would be, again, holding them accountable. So if you, for some, 10 days might be excessive. Some might say it's, you know, not enough. But no matter what, if this is the language it's going to be, and it's going to be connected to professional conduct, they will be held accountable to that. So just keep that in mind.
10 days is very reasonable, right? For any responsible school doing parallel, right?
The problem, the argument that we've heard is from people, I don't know.
10 days is not a lot of time if they're doing, let's say you have two or three applicants with you on inspection, and then you do multiple inspections that day, perhaps, then
right.
10 days is...
And I'm just saying, we heard that at the conference, too, but maybe they're taking on more than they should.
Well, then maybe they're taking on more than they should, you know. But we do know that there is... an immediacy to it. You turn the report in, you want to get feedback as soon as possible. If you have to wait, you know, 12 days, 15 days, a month, it's going to be less meaningful feedback. So I think 10 days, I don't think is onerous at all. For a responsible parallel to be done, performed, and at least turned around, I think it's reasonable.
We didn't know. That's why we highlighted.
Yeah.
Moving down to C, the supervising inspector meets the criteria to be supervising inspector pursuant to R43102-3 and
attestation violation.
You got it. Kurt, what's your meanings in here?
This bit here?
C. Offer 3301.01 regarding attestation violations.
We'll get there when we get to the professional conduct.
Yeah, we refer to an A also, Peter.
What?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sorry.
So, yeah, we'll get to this when we get... Again, like I said, this will be connected to the professional conduct, which is the 30101.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't see any other changes till we come down to C. The home inspector's most current financial assurance of record has expired. But is part of the, can it be assumed? Your
I think you skipped B. So it's currently it is discovery or any loss of cancellation. That's when we know. But right now, your FA with us might, you know, your current FA expires here at the board, and we suspend you and so forth. And then you show up and, hey, actually, I had insurance that entire time. I just, you didn't have it. So.
You didn't have it because they didn't get it to us.
Right. Or, you know, it could even be a board mistake, like it was given to us and then it fell through the cracks. Something might occur. So, to this, this is added language, or if the home inspector's current financial assurance of record has expired. Is it needed? Does it actually, what's the word? And this might be a Scott question.
I think Scott's going to say we need to assume it's current, but...
Because it has to be on file. We have to have it on file.
We have it on file.
Right. It's also one of those things, like, the purpose of the FA is, of course, to protect the public. Are they protecting the public if they have it, but they haven't given it to us? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, that's the question I have, I guess. And so if it has to be on file, then this language probably should be included.
You're asking the question if financial assurance has to be on file with the board? I think that was a due.
I thought that was a license.
It is, and they do get suspended if it expires, and we ask for it and everything like that. But it doesn't need to be specified.
Why and what? You still got me.
So you're clarifying the issue where you have a certificate it expired, but the inspector says, "Hey, I'm currently insured, but you guys
always have
been."
Yeah.
And always have been insured, and here's the proof.
Right. I think it's responsibility of the registrant to make sure you guys have the current, you know, FA certificate. I think that's
think it's the registrant's responsibility. Do you need, the question is, do you need this clarification in here? Because it really is more of a clarification. There's no new rule here. It's just a clarification, right?
Right.
It's a reminder that it's the registrant's responsibility. It's not the insurance companies, and it's not the BTRs.
To chase it down.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I kind of like it as a reminder of responsibility for the registrant. I don't know. It's more on that.
It doesn't say any loss or cancellation. But... which can mean expired. If it's expired, it's going to be canceled.
Right.
And then if it's revoked, you got to wait a year, right?
That's how it is currently, but we're trying to look into it.
So I don't know, Peter, I'm all right. Which is
I don't care which way you run with this. Anybody?
Yeah.
Kurt, if you don't feel it's necessary, strike it.
No, it sounded like the other way, didn't it?
The conversation that we had on this one, to be honest.
There
was a reason. There's a reason why these things come up, because on the surface, the financial assurance seems like it should be not that difficult, but you cannot imagine the headaches that come with the financial assurance part of this. That, or expired, are you? Is that just because of what you just said about...
Yes.
Sometimes... we have an expiration date on it. It's logged. It comes up, shows on our system as expired. So they're put on suspension and notified. But they, when we finally get a hold of them, they go, oh, no, it's current. I had it. I just didn't tell you guys.
Right. And I just, this is just a clarification because, you know, again, we send notifications not like on the day. We like tell you in advance, like, hey, it's coming up. Like 30 days from now, you're going to, our one in our system's expiring. Please give us an updated one.
We appreciate that too, by the way.
Yeah.
So it's, they're letting know that we need it on file. But again, this is just clarifying because it's not technically, like, technically canceled that they have it, but they haven't given it to us.
Well, that line that you have highlighted would raise someone's eyebrows if, in fact, they changed insurance companies and didn't notify, I suppose. So whether they, what you're saying here is that you can suspend their license if the current financial assurance of record has expired, regardless of whether he got another insurance.
He should have given that to us, so it'd be the new one on record.
And that would force, and that would, once they know that, the inspector, they would be sure that you have the current record.
They're supposed to tell us they got new financial assurance.
Well, then I have no problems with reading that.
Okay, thank you.
Let's move along.
Good. Okay, we're down to D. They have a comment of 2 years. Is this the right number? Does the rule protect the public? This is the home inspector who places their home inspector certification on inactive status shall retain proof of financial assurance for at least 2 years after the date of the certificate becomes inactive. A home inspector who fails to retain financial assurance for the required 2 years is subject to suspension or revocation of the home inspection certificate as per subsection C.
So, this, you guys probably beat this to death when you made this rule.
Yeah, yeah, I think 2 years is more than enough.
I think 2 years is more than enough.
Do you think one year is enough?
I think one year might be enough. You know, a lot of inspection companies have a 1 year exculpatory clause saying, hey, you know, you have an issue, then it has to be within a year of the inspection. You can't come after us 3, 4, 20 years down the road that we made a mistake.
Right.
Although they can.
Although they can and they do, but
as far as the financial assurance goes, we can't be held responsible for paying insurance, E&O or bond insurance for forever,
right,
just because we were a home inspector at one time.
Right. Now, when we had the discussion, we talked about this tail coverage, which can be pricey, you know, at times.
Especially since we're going to move those bonds and everything up. So
right.
I'm a little concerned with the 2 years. I'd be more inclined to make it 1 year. However, Mr. Schwartz, are you still with us? You're the one who put the 2 years in there.
I did?
Yes.
I did that?
You
did.
Yes.
I don't remember that, but if you think so. So, I don't know, what if a person, somehow, you know, insurance companies can cancel you and they can not provide that, and it could be actually impossible in some cases. And I don't even know about the bonding companies. Do they do that? Do they do tail coverage?
Well, if you want to buy it, they'll take the money.
Yeah, but does it,
yeah, that's true.
Does it count?
Okay, well, yeah, I would go with 1 year because I just don't, I think two is excessive and arbitrary. Sure.
Great, wow.
You didn't think it was going to go that way, had you?
No, I didn't. Yeah.
Any objections to 1 year from staff?
Does it affect
from
us?
1 year is fine.
From Kurt? Okay.
Yeah, and you know, you're standing in front of the board justifying this, that 99.9% of the issues that somebody has with inspection happens within the first year.
Yeah, I haven't right away.
Right. So if you're being questioned on it, right?
So my only question is it still protect the public with having 1 year? Does losing that extra year somehow?
And my point is the public, I think, is very well still protected.
Okay.
You know, within all reasonable realm.
I like that on the record. So.
And they also have civil court if it really gets out of hand.
Well, there's also statute of limitations of, what, 4 years?
Is that civil, though?
What, statute of limitations?
What?
Not here.
Yeah.
No, anyone can complain against the home inspector for any time.
Yeah, that would be
well, yeah.
Put that in for some of the health boards.
True. Pardon?
I think they put that in for some of the health boards.
Yeah.
How long...
Yeah, we can get a complaint against us any time for anything we've done.
By the neighbor's uncle.
No, but having that board intervene, you know, in other words, will the board accept a complaint?
Anytime.
Anytime.
Yeah, they're really good at it.
There's
no limit.
Well, there's a state statute. There's a state statute.
Somewhere over there got talked years. About that.
And I think that's like the civil cases, though. I don't know necessarily administrative.
It's not
I think that was the distinction between the two. Somebody, statute of limitations, I think it's been the civil bit. I could be wrong. It's been a while since you brought that up and I looked at it.
F, an applicant for renewal certification as a home inspector shall submit. You have here a new section to specify what is required for the time of renewal, but shall submit it. Update of information, provide proof of financial assurance, provide proof of having a valid fingerprint clearance card.
And you can see my comment on that.
And that says, currently statute does not allow the rule package went through this, as the board would not request this unless there was a statutory change. So the fingerprint card has to go through statute first.
It has to go through statute.
Before it comes into rule.
Yeah.
Which is another reason to push the short version as soon as we can. Right.
Yeah, I think the short version statute, then coming back to the big rules, would make more sense.
I think that does make sense. And then the home inspector rules of professional conduct on R-433-01.01, you have just changed the date of the Arizona Chapter of American Society of Home Inspectors, changed the new adoption date.
And then we moved pool and spa out of 247 here because it's about professional conduct, not about applying to be a home inspector.
Thank you.
You did what?
So pool and spa is currently under 247, which tells you how to become a home inspector, whereas professional conduct is where the standards are located. So pool and spa standards and whether you can or you should or shouldn't do them based on the job should go here for clarity.
This is where you put it.
This is where we put it.
I thought they went to 247, no? 301. Okay.
Okay, and then with the professional conduct here, number 5 would be different from the simplified. So this goes back to that attestation and holding the parallel inspector accountable. So you're currently reads, present false, misleading, or deceptive information on an attestation defined under R-430, 247A13, which is those three. So if you said that I'm currently not on probationary, but you were, this would be a professional conduct issue. Or you said, I checked every single one of these and returned them within 10 days, but then the student comes back, actually it took him 30 days for every single one. You would come back to this, is that a professional conduct violation?
So CURT 5 is brand new, but 6 got carried over from something else. Is that right?
Yes. The 6 is the real estate. That would also be in the simple package. I don't think there's any question on that. The 5 is kind of going along with the idea of holding the parallel inspector.
Okay, so this is to support it as an attestation, meaning, and I don't know if this was a recommendation from Scott, we went from an affidavit to an attestation, and now do we need this, you feel we need this additional information saying everything you're signing off on that one signature page, that there were 30 of them, they were done according to the SOPs, the supervising inspector, they're agreeing to all that, right? That's what 5 is.
Yes.
Basic language that you would put the same way you put it on if you provide false, misleading, or deceptive information on an application.
Right.
There was no other way to enforce that?
Well, we had some wording. We had some wording in the affidavit previously.
Right.
Right.
But because I think the parallel inspector isn't a regulated thing, then we can't really.
So we have
you can't hold them accountable. It's, the only thing that happens now is that parallel inspection wouldn't count because the parallel inspector didn't qualify under those.
So you have to connect it to a home inspector's professional conduct.
I'm good with that. Any objections?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. It's just a clarification.
Opinions back
too,
there.
It's really what it is.
It's no, it's great. We're talking how great that is. It's great.
Okay.
I'm sure you are.
Okay, that was the end of that.
So now we've got the schools on the hook for 10 days and attestations. Okay. Moving on. Did I hear someone trying to say something? Dylan? David?
Oh, I actually, I started to jump in for a second. I just wanted to make one minor clarification for the record. I can't recommend any changes to statutes or rules. I can answer legal questions regarding differences in terms. And so I believe I did that, and then the board staff and the committee acted upon that. But I can't make any recommendation regarding it.
Very good, Scott. Thank you.
Sounds like a legal maneuver.
ARS 32101, purpose definitions. We have a definition of home inspection, which means a visual analysis for the purposes of providing a professional opinion of the building, any reasonably accessible installed components, and the operation of the building systems, including the controls normally operated by the owner for the following components of a took-out residential building of 4 units or less and put in dwelling.
This is for discussion only. I'm not married to dwelling, but it's just,
right.
This keeps coming up as well. Does this need to be updated?
Because it's a problem. And Kurt and I kind of arm wrestled on this one yesterday because I don't feel confident in just saying dwelling without...
defining it?
A well-defined definition. Yeah, dwelling, a dwelling. And
currently, dwelling is used in home inspection report. So if you look up on the screen, I had highlighted it there, which is kind of the reason I grabbed that because it's already... a word that's being used in our statute definitions.
Yeah, I don't know. Dwelling is a little loose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's people experiencing homelessness that have a dwelling, too.
That's the first thing I said to her. I go,
yeah.
So now the guy sheds the backyard, they're going to do a parallel inspection.
Yeah.
It's a dwelling.
It comes back to where you have fourplexes and then you have condos that's a fourplex.
Right, but look. Yeah.
Well,
so there's four residential units and fourplexes. But are the condos are individual, so this
right. Each condo is a dwelling unit. If parallel comes in, it's on a high-rise condo building. Are you allowing that to be a parallel inspector?
So here's the thing. Julie's life is a nightmare. All our life is a nightmare because of parallel inspectors.
Right.
You just stop me any moment, Julie. She's such a rock star. We believe very strongly and hope that you will broaden your minds here and just think for a second and are almost pleading, we're pleading, for a separate definition of parallel inspection over home inspection. Because there's a home inspection and then there's a parallel inspection and there's all kinds of crossover issues that come up. think what you want for a parallel inspection, what is needed for a parallel inspection that is with the intent of educating the candidate to be as qualified as possible
mm-hmm.
after 30 parallel inspections as a home inspector. It's, you know, like some of the stuff that comes in, it's like, okay, well, we're looking at it for the minimum standards. Fine, it's handwritten or whatever. Is this client ready? In theory, I guess, but you've got a home inspection. If you have a separate definition for these, if there's a home inspector that's in theory a bad actor, and you have a clear-cut definition of home inspection and everything that entails, including taking payment for it, right, versus a parallel inspection which can't be conducted for fee, and the whole issue with the units, and do you want the parallel inspections to be in the 4 units or less or whatever, but... home inspection, I don't know, we really think there needs to be a separation for clarity.
Well, I thought you guys said this last meeting you had it all figured out, didn't you?
It's always figured out.
Yeah, you left early.
Oh, okay. So, you're looking for a different definition, a little more lax on a parallel inspection as opposed to a home inspection.
Not lax.
Or lax in the respect that 4 units or less.
I want to shoot, because right now the parallel inspection, how it's being defined in rule, is that it is a home inspection.
Right.
It can't be, because the student isn't getting a fee, doesn't have a client per se. We get a lot of parallels that come in that don't have an agreement. I mean, I would think some parallel inspectors would give them kind of like a faux, or like, this was the client and you can fill it out. But like, if you go to a house that's not owned yet, I mean, that's a good question. Is a model home count, or they might not have a client. But it's like, is it really a home inspection by definition? Because if it is, can they really even do it? So it's.
Well, imagine going to open door and pulling the cover off an electrical pan.
Oh, it works good. I mean,
does that happen?
No.
And probably can't. And you're not meeting the standard if you don't. I mean.
And there's been a lot of pushback with the 4 units or less.
I can just see those guys in the bathrooms in an open door.
But in that scenario, in a high-rise condo, are you including that in the high-rise condo or no? Because it's in a building with more than four units, so you're not counting.
It's not a home.
It's a dwelling unit.
Based on this definition of a home inspection, in our definition of parallel says it must be a home inspection. This says a home inspection has to be in a residential building of 4 units or less.
So it's kind of like the water's got muddy.
It is supposed to be 4 or less.
Point.
That's the point, though.
Yeah, and we get pushback on it. Doesn't mean it's they're right. In like, we just need it. It's right now. It's really just attached to it's a home inspection, and we're just wondering if it needs to be clarified. That's a little different in how it needs to be done, or does it? Is it good how it is now?
Well, to be licensed, I mean, your ASHI standards state 4 or less, and these inspections have to comply with ASHI standards.
Right.
That's it.
Okay, so 4 or less is in. So what problem did that cause you, Julie? What are you saying?
It's not a problem for Julie. It's a problem for the parallel inspectors who give us logs with things that don't count.
Like townhouses that are just more than 4 connected.
How do we know
that?
Okay, so
you're
looking
at
the addresses. Okay,
so. I think the confusion, again, I don't know, I'm not a home inspector, obviously, but like, as a home inspector, would you do an inspection for a condo in a multi?
Mm-hmm.
You would, right?
We would. Exactly.
For the purpose of a parallel inspection, you can accept that, and I think that's where it gets muddy.
And that is, and I think we have to get to the point where a home inspection and parallel are the same darn thing. I don't know that they can be different, you know. And the number 4 came from code on the definition of a dwelling unit and what the IRC covers for residential code. But, I mean, the 4 units is, if I've got a 6-unit building and I'm going to inspect the whole unit, the whole building, BTR has no jurisdiction because the whole building is more than 4 units. There's no jurisdiction. It's a commercial building. If I'm inspecting 1 unit within that 6-unit building, it should be a home inspection.
Not how it reads, though, unfortunately.
It should be a home inspection. So.
That's contrary to your standards.
And it should have nothing to, you know, if I'm doing a unit in a high-rise in Biltmore area, it should be counted as a home inspection. It's a legal home inspection. I apply the SOPs. I don't care if there's not a garage, you know, whatever. It doesn't have every single
component. It doesn't have a foundation. I mean,
it should be a home inspection. If we're counting it as a home inspection under jurisdiction for the BTR, I think it should be counted as to be included within a parallel. If it's a home inspection, it's a home inspection.
Yeah, but you're not being held. You're not being held to comply with the ASHI standards once it's above four. Theoretically.
Well, technically,
it's spelled out in your ASHI standard.
It is too much overrated.
But that's where the four units came from, and I'm not sure that they've been properly applied.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
we're going to go round and round on this. We're
concerned about it. When does it become a commercial inspection? That's the point.
We're concerned
about they've got that in there. Exactly.
That's what our concern is.
Yeah. But the same building across the street, you know, has got the same five units in it, but they're individually owned. Whereas the one with the five units on the first side of the street, that one doesn't comply.
Right now, how we look at it is that when we look at the address, and if it's a building and it has more than four units, that was not a home inspection, regardless of it's one home inspection of one dwelling within that five. If it has more than four units in it, it's not a home inspection based on how this is being read.
That's correct.
Well, you've got to read it differently.
Well, that's not. And if it needs to be read different, it needs to be written different.
I feel like the point of the parallel inspections is to teach new people what they're going to be encountering. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, we happen to be lucky enough to live in a city where we have lots of homes. But if we weren't, maybe Phoenix was New York. We wouldn't be having this discussion because they would all be commercial inspections. But the point is, if the new guys that train with somebody are going to go, if they're only doing their 30 and then they're going to be out on their own, they need to see a high rise. They need to know maybe you're going to have a condenser on the roof. Maybe it's going to be a water-cooled heat pump. You don't know. But to get them exposure to different types of units, and if Dylan was right on the 16 to 18% of home inspections are in these types of buildings, then that's about a fifth of the inspections that these new guys are going to be seeing. I think these parallels should include high-rise buildings, condos where you might have six in a row.
Well, then you have to limit
it. Thank you. Are you also good with somebody doing all 30 parallel inspections in a condo high-rise?
No. And how many applications have come in with that?
But I'm not good with them doing 30 that are just homes either.
If it can happen, it will happen.
Okay, well.
And what if they're training with somebody, I don't know, who specializes in those, or... But if they do 30 homes, they're not qualified to do a high-rise building necessarily. I mean, maybe they're a little bit easier, but it's still the concept is they're not seeing a wide exposure to it.
Let me interject.
Okay.
I feel we're moving away from what the purpose of a parallel inspection is. A parallel inspection is to give a newbie who's supposed to have some type of education in the 11 areas of concern, okay? The ability to learn how to enter and exit and leave a building the way it's supposed to be and to deal with the different entities and people involved in a home inspection and to write a report that reflects that, all right? I'm not interested in a parallel inspection teaching a home inspector about a water-cooled heat pump, for instance, in a high-rise building. He's going to learn that, if he doesn't already know it, through experience. The 30 parallels are to be sure that he knows how to take the information he sees and put it into a format that meets our standards and is relatable to the people that he's working for and learning in the process, okay? So I'm not concerned that he sees everything there is out there to see. All right. I'm not concerned that he knows about the multi-dwelling aspects of a building. All right. I want him to understand electrical, plumbing, heating, cooling, all of those. Take them, which he should know. Take them through the parallel inspections and confined it into a readable format that meets the standards. That's the purpose of the paragraph. Not a training issue, but insofar as electric and plumbing goes, a training issue on how to take that information and move it into the proper channels. Okay? That's what a parallel is all about. So if people are going into parallel inspections expecting to be come out engineers in electronics, they're wrong. Okay? What they're going to be coming out as is proficient in taking the information they know about the electrical and putting it into a format. Okay? And how to deal with all the different aspects of the inspection in the interim. All right? So we made this 4 units or less simply because once you get over 4 units, you're not seeing what an individual dwelling actually has to deal with. Main disconnects, underground or overhead services, things like that. You get into the other aspects of buildings, you're not going to see any of that. Okay? So we wanted them to be able to see the electrical system, the plumbing system, the HVA system, from the very beginning to the very end, which you don't get in high-rise buildings. All you get is the tail end. All right? So I'm not adverse to saying, okay, well, let's accept every type of dwelling. All right? If that's the way the committee wants to run with it. But I do want you to try to keep track of what that parallel inspection is about.
Yep.
All right?
I have a question, just sure. As a layman. I just want to know, what do home inspectors inspect outside of just a normal home? Like, there's condos, apartments, mobile homes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do they fall under this definition currently? Is a mobile home a residential building of 4 units or less? Yes,
yeah,
or no?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Short answer is yes.
Well, I had an EAC where they're saying absolutely not.
Well, that's the...
Who says it's not?
I can't bring up anything, but it completely happened.
If it's still got the wheels on it, it may not be.
Yeah, but then you're eliminating, to counter, and I respect what you said in that, but if our job is to prepare for the public, for the service, if you only teach them homes, then you're not translating a proper story in condos. You're eliminating that.
Hold on.
You can't tell me. I don't
meeting is to stop. He just left the room. No quorum.
12:20, we're taking a pause.
So,
I have a question, Scott. By definition of
yep.
home inspection, we don't have separate definition of parallel and home inspection. As it is right now, if we were to receive a complaint on a horrible home inspection that happened on a condo that was part of a 100-unit plex, whatever, multiplex, That doesn't actually constitute a home inspection, then, does it, by this definition?
That would be a question for the board. They would have to interpret their statutes and rules.
Because I don't think that was the intent writing this. If that was
that was not the intent.
Right. Well, just throwing it out there for thought.
Yeah, I kind of want, as you guys are talking about, mobile home counts and all these things, I'm wondering if we need more clarity or a list or something, because these are probably, 20 years old when the home inspectors first became certified.
And it was new. It was all new, new territory, new everything. Yeah. Else to look at it.
Certainly, but there's also, I don't think, prior to that time, condos were a huge deal as they are now, per se.
And manufactured homes in Arizona are obviously massive in Arizona. I mean, to have that be an issue that's a point of confusion means there needs to be some kind
how
of...
How is that confusion?
There shouldn't be a confusion.
No,
issue.
It
whoever
be
said
all.
That,
but it is.
Well, how many times? That
more
person should be just brought into a room,
more
pushed around a little bit.
Sure.
Around.
You can't vote just
home,
by what you know and what you think.
A mobile home meets
bigger.
Every criteria of a separate dwelling of less than 4 units.
I agree.
Unless they stack 7 or 8
units. Maybe it goes back to establishing what a dwelling is.
Sorry, is a mobile home a residential building?
Of course it is.
Yeah, it's a structure.
But
it's still built.
It needs to be something put in there so it's then Julie doesn't also get a parallel inspection on an RV that was parked in a...
Yeah,
you
know,
that's different.
And don't tell me how many times that happened, because you cannot imagine what comes to...
Oh, come on.
Well, I mean, there's a couple things here. One is that I think we need to include a condo and a high-rise building as part of the BTR's jurisdiction. Wouldn't you think?
I agree with that. That's why dwellings
right.
are there.
As a home inspection.
Right, as a home inspection. We've got a home inspector that goes in there, and it's a high-rise building in Biltmore, and we have no jurisdiction over that at all. And, gee, the ADRE probably wouldn't be too pleased about that. But so I think that's one thing we have to clean up. But the other thing is, I think any inspection should be counted in a parallel. Now, I don't know which topic we're on here, Mr. Chair, anything that constitutes a home inspection should be counted as a parallel. And I realize that it begs to the point of, okay, well, now you need to start defining things. I'm hesitant, Judith, to start defining, start examples of what a home inspection might be. It can be a mobile home. It can be a high-rise condo. It can be a this. It can be a that. It can be a townhome. It can be a, you know, then we're maintaining that. You know, it's a dwelling unit, period. You know, and the inspection should count under jurisdiction, and the same inspection should count on a parallel sheet as 130, in my opinion.
So casitas and lofts over automotive.
If it's a standalone, dwelling unit, even if it's got the same address as far as I'm concerned.
It's a shed in the backyard with the address that has electricity but nothing else. That's a dwelling that should be counted for a parallel inspection.
Yeah, in my opinion.
I don't think that should be counted.
I don't think so either. I mean, it's not a dwelling. It doesn't have water. You say electricity and nothing else.
No. It's got to have water and electric. It's got to be a standalone functional dwelling unit, right? Just, that's what we're talking about.
But
here.
Then you get back into define. Does it have its own electrical panel? Does it? It's its own. You know, it's not that. It's not that simple.
And then there's guest houses and casitas and all that.
Yeah, I mean, the casitas got a little gray, you know, I can see, but, I mean, the condo should be a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned, as far as to be considered in jurisdiction and as parallel.
Well, what they're running up against, though, is all these outlandish things that are popping up, you know, it's like, you know, they got the same address here 10 times.
Right.
Well, yeah, it might be A, B, C, D, and E, but... No. Is it a separate call?
Can I say,
each one a separate
call? Mr. Bates, can I say something? Whatever.
Please.
So I believe that a dwelling unit is a term of art. And you know, if you look it up even in law library definitions, it's defined in several different ways that all kind of point to the same thing and might get you where you want to go. But it's a single unit providing a room or a suite of rooms operated as a housekeeping unit used or intended to be used as a domicile by one or more persons and supporting general living conditions, usually including cooking, eating, sleeping, and sanitary facilities. So, you know, we just didn't foresee all this arguments and stuff. If it's a high-rise condo and there's a single unit inspected, that's a home inspection. It's a domicile. It's their home. If they're buying the entire high-rise building, that's a commercial inspection. Right?
I don't know.
But it's got the same type of unit you just mentioned. It's just entire building's being sold.
I agree with David that we should be accepting any type of a dwelling. All right? And we have always left it up to the home inspectors to know what is out of their domain. And we've given them the ability to say, I know nothing about this system. You need a professional out here. And to put that in the report and thus meet the standards. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you have a forced hot water, or rather a chiller, chilling your heat pump, and all you can see is the air handler, and your report is supposed to say there's a chiller on the roof that I know nothing about, and if you want any more information, you find a professional. We've always enabled them to do that. So if you're learning only condos and you go into a home and you don't know what you're doing, you have the ability to say, I don't know what I'm doing, okay, on this specific system or these specific components. So I don't see why we have a four-unit limitation on anything, to be honest with you. This is a carryover from the ASHI 1970.
Yeah, and I don't see where it benefits us, Roger, from that carryover. I mean, I realize how it got carried over, but again, how we're applying it, it's being misapplied, I believe, here.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So, therefore, I think we should, getting back to what's on the screen here, I kind of like the cross-out of the residential building of four units or less, and
how about you just say residential dwelling? So at least we're still
residential.
Residential
dwelling, maybe.
Not commercial.
I think we're a lot closer here. I was just looking back up for the dwelling unit definition, because that's a standard definition throughout the building disciplines for a dwelling unit, and the codes use it. And if we want to be on the same page. But I think it should be dwelling or dwelling unit. I'm just not sure the exact.
Nothing wrong with either.
Peter, isn't it true that the 2002 ASHI standards states four units or less? If you adopted those standards, you've got to comply with that, right?
Well, yes, that's why we're reviewing those standards.
But you've just had ASHI approve the...
2022. I mean, the last one they just approved.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Unless you change that, you're going to...
Right.
Well, the standards have a definition of home inspection now. So it would be 2 point something.
I didn't bring my standards. There's no def, I don't think, for a home inspection.
It's in there.
Right there. Four or less dwelling units.
All right, yeah, it's 3.1B. These standards are applicable to buildings with four or less dwelling units and their garages or carports. So, yes.
I mean, technically, if you put a residential dwelling unit up there.
I'm sorry, Kurt.
If you did change this to dwelling, that would be what the state defines as a home inspection. But then when you do your standards, the standards only apply to whatever's in the standards.
And for you to do parallels, you have to comply with the standards. So you're still restricted to four or less.
We'd have to go back and change it.
Yeah, you'd have to change it.
Well, we did say ongoing.
No, because it says that these standards are applicable to buildings of four units or less, not that the rule is applicable to four buildings.
Do you do a parallel, though? You have to follow the standards.
Yep, follow the standards. Yeah.
You're restricted. And it's for a good reason. I mean, you don't want all your parallels in a high rise.
So,
yeah, I'm not sure the 3.1b was ever meant to limit.
Parallel inspections didn't exist when
that was I know.
But I mean, wouldn't that limit just a home inspection as well if it's in the standards? Just an actual home inspection?
Absolutely.
It limits home inspections, correct? Just it being in the standards. Not just parallels, but home inspections. You don't have to follow those standards if it goes beyond the four units.
And you are not held responsible on an EDC as well.
That's being misinterpreted.
Well,
no, it isn't.
I think it's not.
You know, it says these standards are applicable to buildings with four units or less.
Yep.
It's not about buildings. We're down to dwelling units. It's really, we're not inspecting buildings necessarily. We're inspecting dwellings. And the way it is.
Instead of four or less, can we put single family dwelling units in the garages or carports? Would that work?
I don't know.
You're either sitting at four units or you're sitting at residential dwellings. I don't think we need to be any more specific either way. We just have to decide which way we want to run with this. Do you want to run with four units or less, or do you want to accept every dwelling? There is advantages, even though I don't like it, of doing condos. There's advantages of doing a dwelling on the 35th floor of a building. You learn things, okay? And you learn how to, through a parallel of such a building, you learn how to write those things. And that's what we're really concerned with, is to be able to give your client a better understanding of the property conditions, regardless of what the property is. So I'm all for changing to residential dwelling and leaving it there and going back to ASHI and asking them to make a change.
I think we adjust the rules how we need to, and then if we need to go back on the SOPs, I think we go back to ASHI on that. But I think we're agreed that right now there's an issue that needs to be fixed here with the high-rise is not included in the jurisdiction of all of our rules. And that's, I see that as a bigger issue than a high-rise in a parallel, frankly. Somebody screws up on a high-rise, we have no jurisdiction at all.
Correct.
And we've never really done anything with that, and I think we need to fix that.
Although I think the board would still be able to declare jurisdiction on something like that, wouldn't they?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't either.
That'd be a gray area.
But the problem we're facing right now is what it's doing to staff when these parallels are coming in for the shed in the backyard. That just happens to have electric plumbing and meets all the criteria of a residential dwelling.
Right.
All right. And if it does, I think it ought to be accepted so that we can clean up the problems that staff is having and get it out of our standards for four units or less, and let that run for 25 years and see how it works.
I think we should, whatever we need, we should lean towards the definition that David referred to. If it's got a kitchen, a bathroom, the intent for the purpose is as a domicile. I mean, if it's a casita with just a wet bar, no kitchen, maybe that doesn't make the cut. It's got to have a kitchen, a bathroom, and a place to sleep, and
we need to add a definition of dwelling. Everybody should come up with their best definition of dwelling and email it to Kurt.
I'd be more inclined to take an existing one and not read.
Well, you can look at existing
right.
ones and send, say, I think this is the best one.
I'll send it right now. Kurt only?
You can copy me. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
If you send it to me.
Why don't we get on both sides of the room?
I mean, you know, then you can decide.
I'd much rather accept the existing definition than build our own here.
While we're on that route, any objections?
No, but I thought you guys had this all resolved earlier this year. How'd we get back into it?
Well, because the problem never got corrected.
Oh, okay.
Okay, the parallels are still coming in with outhouses as an
gotcha
as an option. Anyone? Sean?
No.
Residential dwellings, regardless.
Yeah.
Andrew?
I like it.
David?
Is the concern, though, of multiple? Would it enhance it to say individual residential dwelling? Because are you concerned? Is the
Well, we're going to be talking residential dwelling as an individual unit.
Yeah.
We may need the term individual in the actual def and the SOPs to clarify, because it's even the, you know, it's not clear even in the SOPs. We talk about a building. What's the building? Is that all the units?
And at the end of the day, Julie knows if there's something that somebody's really pushing as a parallel that we don't feel like really qualifies, we just graciously offer to take it to the board and let them decide that. Because we can't identify that it meets whatever we feel like the criteria is.
Yeah. You know, keep in mind, you guys are doing way more than the BTR used to do.
Right.
They're never used to do the address verification.
But that's
and I'm
the
not
pushback
saying,
also.
You know, I'm saying what you're doing is good, but it's a you know, you're taking on that commitment of, you know, the rest of the challenge of it. And
showing due diligence that we're doing our job to protect the public.
What you're doing is good, but it's. It's bringing up these bigger questions, which need to be answered, right? That's why we're here.
We've been looking before, and now some people are not happy about that.
So, Julie, can I ask you a question? When you get something, let's just say it's apartment conversion, the four units, but you see a bunch of buildings, and you guys might look at it. If we have a picture of the main panels, four clusters, that comply?
If
it's pretty clear, but typically it's not clear, and then we ask for more information, and that's when the pushback.
Okay.
It's still me.
You'd have to put the picture in the application, because I don't think Julie's going to go through the report.
No, once it gets denied, then you throw them a picture, and they say, okay, it's good.
Okay. So we seem to be leaning towards residential dwelling as opposed to four units or less. Any more discussion? Now, we have a question here. Is it important that the dwelling be complete and habitable?
That was just part of the home inspection report. Components of a completed dwelling.
Meaning not a model home that's not complete, or given us addresses of partial homes that are framed and not a partially completed
home. Honest structure. You're getting some of those?
Yes.
We got one where they listed one that was complete and then put eight saying, well, they're all going to be the same.
Well, then you go after the parallel inspector.
Feel free.
Sign it off.
We would be having
only
to discuss it.
Well,
yes, they weren't. Yeah.
You see, I can personally grid and frame the book.
Look at you.
Again, I think the confusion is maybe the builder asked or the inspector to come in and do an inspection on a.
We do that too, but we don't call them home inspections.
But I think that's where.
We're looking for. It's almost like the contracting term, substantial completion. If there's a hole in the wall, we don't care. We're going to write it up. But the home is substantially complete. It's meant for habitability, right? Substantial completion. So we could say substantially complete dwelling if we need to, but because it's never 100%, right? We know that it's never 100%. But
if it was, we wouldn't be.
All right. Now, what are you? You're trying to encourage inspections on a home being built. Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all.
That's what's coming in.
Differentiate that a home inspection is not a frame. It's not a pre-slab. It's not a 1-year warranty. It's a.
Well, it could be 1 year.
You know.
I think I think completed dwelling is okay, and maybe part of what we were talking about adding in residential dwelling, it should say completed or.
Yeah.
Residential
because you're going to add, this is going to be a little confusing. Hey, substantially completed.
Right,
all right, now I go to a I go to a new build that's almost there. It's got the plumbing, the electric, and all that
the
stuff.
No drywall. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
You're reporting on the drywall.
It's easier.
Yeah, interior conditions or whatever. Drywall missing. Yeah, come on.
Just report there's no wall cover.
There's so many homes out there, I don't think you need to do that.
The truth is, we inspect everything. It could be just the slab. It could be just the frame. It could be all of that. But none of those are home inspections. A home inspection is the completed project, and so completed is a very important word to put in.
Yes.
Completed residential dwelling.
4 units or less.
No.
Right now, that's the way it is. You got to enforce them.
Right now, that's the way it is.
That's
but it's also not completed.
No, I mean, that's fine on the substantially, but I'm saying if there's a question of is it complete or not, well, the AC unit didn't get installed. Can I still perform a home inspection? Well, yeah, you can. You can exclude the AC, but is that still a complete, is it still a home inspection if the AC unit wasn't installed, they hadn't completed the install on it?
Well, it's just like any other. I mean, you may have an oven that's not installed, and it's
right,
still. You're just saying oven's not installed.
Yeah. So my point is that's a substantially complete house.
Still
pretty
completed.
Much done. We can still do the inspection. It's not complete, though, is it?
What if the utilities haven't been turned on?
Structurally, it's done.
Yeah, well, that's a bigger issue, but it depends on the utility.
Well, if the utilities aren't on, I don't know how you can meet the standard. How can you
check? Well, you can have gas off and just claim gas appliance.
Gas off is one thing, but I'm talking about water and electrical.
Well,
how do you do your polarities and groundings? How do you do your functional flows and drainage?
Yeah, it's got to be completed.
How do you know if there's any leaks in the water or the drainage? I mean, anyone who would call that a home inspection and then disclaim all of that stuff, as a parallel, if they disclaimed it all properly,
it's compliant. Yeah.
It should be compliant, but as a home inspection, I would never buy it.
Oh.
Right. Yeah. Kurt, this is the current wording says completed.
That's the current.
Did you pass that?
All right. Yeah, I'm fine with this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Keep it.
Yeah, but you see, you don't want to pay money for something that's undone. But on the other hand, if the guy showed that he actually knew what it was he was looking at, and just because it wasn't turned on, and he said that, to stop that from being a parallel inspection, it wouldn't stop it from being a home inspection, except if he disclaimed it all. You know, he still meets the standard. So I think they should be one and the same. I don't think you should have major limitations on it. And the home inspector who writes a report and tries to sell it, that when there's nothing working in the property, the buyer would be a fool to buy it. People have got to be responsible for their own actions.
But we're talking about parallels.
Right. As a parallel, if you disclaimed it properly and addressed the items, I don't see that it would be a problem. He's not doing himself justice. He only has to do 30 of them. He ought to do 30 good ones.
Right.
Well, completed dwelling would take that away. He would have to do a completed home.
Substantially.
That's the way it ought to be. I think it's perfect.
Yeah, I think it's fine with it. I'm fine with this current wording. That's our existing wording.
Yeah.
What wording?
Completed dwelling.
Okay. You got residential completed dwelling?
I don't know that it says residential.
It says it at the top, but not where it already says completed dwelling.
No, he's got it. Residential completed dwelling.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, in the depth, yeah.
I'll see you later.
All right.
I don't think anything changed here from last time.
You highlighted completed dwelling down in J. Is that wording always been there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Let's move to 32111. Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee.
That's us.
Okay. The first change would be from three of us to five of us. Any comments on that? And then it will be a zoo.
Well, and again, you guys didn't have issue last time. I didn't make any updates to any of this.
Yeah, that's
we went down through all this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We went down through all the blue and the red.
Yeah.
We've done all this at the previous meetings.
Mm-hmm.
All the way down to B. B. You got 5 years. Demonstrate active practice for at least 5 years in the state or territory is registered. That's got to change, right? Oh, this is universal we're talking about here.
Where are you at?
I'm further down, I think. I'm down to 32112202. 32112202. That's it. B.
Down part there.
It's the first place I see someone has a question.
This is kind of comedy language to let people come in. Currently, we have universal licensure, so if you're a resident of this state and you can prove to the board that you are licensed elsewhere as a home inspector for at least a year, you're in good standing, and the requirements to get licensed there were equivalent or better, or I guess higher standards than here.
There aren't any.
you can become licensed without going through parallel inspections and all of that kind of stuff. And so this was because we're creating comedy language for the other professions, and this was kind of similar to that. But is it really needed because of how the home inspector profession, I mean, you're going to probably do home, be living where you're working. Whereas most of our other professionals, a third of them, such as like the engineers, architects, don't live in the state, but they can do, you know, they're licensed here so they can do projects. And so it's more for them, the comedy, to be able to get registered quickly and easily without actually having to live here. But is that the same thing for home inspectors? Is there a need? Is there a want, such as those who may live on the border of Arizona and, you know, having this pathway to licensure?
That's funny because, I mean, the instances we were talking about was California, and they don't
license
their home inspectors. Right. So,
could you just a quick explanation of universal licensure, please?
So that was put into place by the legislature, just a pathway to get licensed, a different pathway, so they don't have to do the parallels.
They don't have to do anything. They're holding a license, the same license in another state.
They show us that license, and then their fingerprint card and proof of residency.
Right. So it's not exactly reciprocity, essentially,
no.
But we're honoring what they did in another state as long as that state whose license equal or better, right? That's what universal licensing is. So, and that's what that's across the BTR rules, not just home inspectors.
That's the whole state.
So the question is,
the whole
do we
state, so, every occupation?
Right. So that's inferred, and the question is, do we need this because it's already inferred?
No, someone that might not live in Arizona.
So this would be for somebody who maybe is licensed in another state, doesn't live here, but wants to be licensed here. If this would be an expedited way to doing that, if it's needed.
Oh, you mean for those virtual inspections?
I know. I don't think it's needed, and I think it's for specifically that, but I can only think of the border people.
Yeah, I've had someone ask about that who live on the border.
Well, as long as they got a state license, that'd be fine.
And then I highlighted...
If it's redundant, let's get rid of it. We have enough to worry about. Is it redundant?
I just don't... I'd be the last person to say, probably, but I don't know that we use B.
I don't either.
So if California was licensed or registered, that, you know, that would be the marginal place where I think it would happen. And I've seen that in other occupations too, because they go back and forth. You know,
it would be rare. I think we would have one person that lives on the border of Arizona in a licensed state.
So, do you see benefit to keeping this for clarification, since it's already kind of inferred anyway? Or
no, this would be a complete addition, and we don't need to include it. Is what I'm asking. Do you want this even presented in a pack?
We want this option.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be easy to say, well, B1A, I mean, that's universal. I don't think anybody's going to argue that, because we have to do that anyway. It just puts it in the rule. But B, I mean, you could argue that it makes you look good, because they're coming from another state that is registered. I don't, you know.
Does universal cover these three things?
No, not letter B.
B is, you would say that's 1 year. You have to be licensed in the other jurisdiction for at least 1 year, and then you would have to be living here as part of it. Do you have to be a resident of Arizona to be have licensure through Universal?
That's the difference from B. So B is,
you're
living somewhere else, and maybe you're a snowbird. Let's go with that. So you live in another state that's registered, and you've been doing it for 20 years, and you want to come here, boom, and do it while you're here in the winter as a snowbird.
But you don't want to do the parallel.
But you don't want to do all that stuff, yeah.
And then if that were the case, this would be necessary, is what you're saying?
No,
they still have to be licensed.
If we change, yeah, they still have to be, well, that's how they would get licensed.
It's just another pathway.
It's another pathway instead of, say, the 1,000...
inspections,
which maybe in that, you know, the scenario, fictitious scenario I'm creating, they maybe have anyway. So I, you know, maybe that would be sufficient for somebody like the snowbird, the fictitious snowbird.
And just to point out, it says this is exempting you from the education experience and exam requirements. It doesn't exempt you from a fingerprint clearance card or background stuff and so forth.
Right.
It exempts them from the exam?
That's what it says.
But
that's the comedy
the
language.
The other state has to have had an exam requirement. That's,
and they may have. It's, this is, again, more...
Not for universal?
Not for universal.
Yeah.
Right. Because the legislature wiped all of that out with universal.
Yeah.
You can't look at all the things that you normally do.
Right.
And again, my opinion is, like, the rarity of it, I don't know if it's needed. But I wanted to present it to you guys based on how our other language is going for the other professions.
Right.
Okay, so they can come from an unlicensed state, then. Is that what you're saying?
No,
in B1A it says, you know, that the other state has substantially equivalent or greater than the requirements of this state. So something that's fairly equal, they can move over here and say, okay, I'll work here as well without having to retake the national exam that maybe they took in New Mexico. I don't know New Mexico's standards. Or they took 80-something classes in New Mexico and maybe have 15 pairs, something that's similar to us, and they've got, do they have to come here and do it as well?
So,
but they're not
actually,
as a license.
Actually, I'm looking at this,
certified.
And you know what? This isn't... Am I missing something? I think we're not clear here, because 1A, that's describing universal. Mm-hmm. But B, so if you're saying that both.
Yeah.
But that's
the comedy.
This
like
is comedy.
This is comedy.
This is not reciprocity.
Oh, okay, because.
Reciprocity, you wouldn't even have to put that away. Just say, if you're licensed in these states, you can just come here and work without getting licensed. That's reciprocity.
Right.
So, okay, so that actually is more burdensome than the other path that you guys just talked about.
The universal.
Not universal.
That 1,000 was for his supervising inspector only.
Oh.
Not applications.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. That's
yes,
okay. I
absolutely.
Confused it myself.
Okay. Right.
If you see a need, leave it. Anyone see a need? And if you don't see a need, move it out. Anyone not see a need?
Think about that one a little bit more before we just...
Can you all add to this, or you can't add anymore?
Yeah, this is a progress.
Well, because the experience is great, but you guys don't require one inspection report to look at to make sure they are compliant?
Yes, they do.
Not under this.
Not under the universal. Universal, no.
Oh, you're talking about through the universal.
So,
and not through the universal.
And universal is not optional.
Oh, that's what I was asking. So you cannot add to that?
No.
Okay.
Put down
so
by
you're
the
restricted.
Legislature, yeah.
That's interesting.
The state,
so with universal,
us.
They would have to be from a licensed state.
Correct.
But they wouldn't have to pass any exam.
Right, it would have to be equal
license
or greater.
Licensed for 1 year, in good standing, proof of residency.
And so they could come in here with no exam. At all ever passed.
No NHI.
I'm sorry?
If it wasn't required from the state that they're coming from for them to get licensure in that state.
They just have to meet that state's requirements. If they met that state's requirements, then they're good.
Well like California, it's just all you have to do is register. There's
they're
no
not
exam
licensed.
Requirement.
But
they're not registered, but they're not
the way
licensed.
I understood it had to be equal or greater then, right?
Yeah,
in the board,
universal,
that is correct, and the board has to basically look at every single universal to make that determination by looking at the statutes and rules of that state.
And that's up to the board.
Case by case thing.
So the exam would be a big consideration in equal greater than.
Right, but the exam gets thrown out with universal licensing. So why can't a California inspector then be considered?
Can't speak for the board, but the way that language... Scott, you want to jump in on any of this? I don't think that they could look at and judge by the education.
I'm not sure to what degree I can jump in this particular one, but I will say that, it's going to be, as Kurt was saying, it's a board decision as to whether or not the qualifications are that qualify you to perform that practice in Arizona. But it is going to be a board question ultimately, looking at all of the circumstances as well as the various statutes and rules regarding the profession.
So if the state doesn't offer registration or certification, they don't comply. So that's perfect.
That's right.
But the question was the exam. What if the state didn't require a national exam or any type of an exam on that? And that would be at the discretion of our board.
Well,
they would have to decide whether he needed it or not. And there's nothing wrong with that system.
Yeah.
You know, I know we hate, especially all the time that we've all put into that exam. You would hate for them not to have to take that exam.
Let them sweat. Yeah.
I don't know if there are any other states that license that don't require the national exam. I don't know that. Maybe Ashley knows.
There might be different exams. Are there still different exams?
Yeah, the international still has their exam. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of other state exams. Florida has a state exam.
Right.
There's a couple others.
So there are several different exams.
That have state-specific rather than...
A couple, and some will use the NHIE and then have their own state module and bolt that on them and do it.
But most of them are NHIE.
Yeah, most of
large
them are.
Percentage.
I just think it's a loophole for somebody to come in without the exam. They could, again, come from California the way this is written.
No, they can't.
No, all it says is if they provide proof to the board of the following, and then 1A, substantially equivalent, and I figure that's up to you guys. If you're like, all this looks great, you don't have the, you're not the board or committee, but it's up to the board. And if they say, okay, fine, great. But if they say, no, I'd like you to take a national exam, don't worry about the 84 credits, don't worry about the parallels. You know, you can, the board can supplement and say, you need to at least do this.
Yeah, now, and I understand how this is written, but the universal licensure allows California to be.
California's law doesn't license, so they don't count.
Got to be registered or certified.
Universally, they have a license.
But they have a registration act, do they not? You have to register to be a home inspector, don't they? I had heard they had a registration.
I remember it's all done through CREA. It's through the realtors.
Okay, so it's got to have some kind of regulation. Okay, got it.
If I remember correctly.
You do.
Okay. So maybe we leave this, Peter.
Well, if there's no reason to pull it out, leave it. Unless it's redundant with
we've talked about it enough. Maybe it needs to be clarified in here.
Well, we can proceed. I mean, we can.
Before we move on, you would like this to disappear. I get the impression.
Well, I'm just putting it out there because we're writing the comedy language for all the professions. I wanted to make sure that it was included for you guys to look at. My opinion that universal kind of covers this pretty well because home inspectors generally are going to reside in the state in which they're going to work.
Okay, but now do you see any reason that this could cause us problems being here? Well, can it cause staff problems? Can it cause the board problems? Can it cause the industry any problems having it here?
It seems very close to what universal is, and I mean, you could say in the opinion they don't like universal in general anyways, so why would you want to expand upon something that we don't like? That argument could be made.
Okay, that is an argument. Because we tried to resist universal. And this comedy here is comedy.
It's not very funny.
It could disappear and I wouldn't miss it.
Well,
it just seems it's ambiguous with the universal. It just seems like there's ambiguity.
No, they actually say the same thing.
Are they right in line?
Not
all
necessarily.
Way?
This one, you don't have to live in the state. Mm-hmm. So if somebody wants to try to come in this way, at least you could argue this substantially equivalent or greater to the requirements of the state. Mm-hmm. If they were, I don't know, if they came, let's say, from a state that didn't require that national exam.
Well, that would be up to the board to decide that,
right?
Even through
so they wouldn't pass this, but they'd pass universal litmus
test. Can only pass universal if they live here and show residency.
Right.
I'm saying this would be somebody who doesn't
live here, trying
to come in a different way.
Do we have no system to certify a home inspector who doesn't live here?
Just a normal pathway.
It doesn't matter.
The normal way.
The normal requirement.
The normal way, he can move anywhere he wants.
Yeah.
No, I don't see any difference.
What does Julie think? She's the one that's got to deal with this.
I have no opinions.
The rest of this, I think, was decided last meeting. All the FA language, adding the professional liability, the 100 to the bond.
Where are you at?
You only raised it for the bond to match.
Just the bond, yeah, that's right. We never touched the rest of it.
Yeah, just to bring the bond up to snuff with the E&O insurance.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about raising the 200 up.
I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to do that. Okay, edited to match alarm language. I love that as a reason.
After talking about it more, the previous language basically said that if you didn't maintain the fingerprint clearance card, that you would be suspended and revoked, kind of same language as an FA. After discussing it, we went back to how the alarm agent language currently is, and that's a invalid or valid, which is kind of like a switch. If you don't have a valid fingerprint card, your certification's invalidated until you give us a good one, then we flip the switch right back. And as opposed to the finality of possible revocation.
If you don't switch it back.
And this would be language in this statute that allows the board to ask for that fingerprint card beyond just the initial. Would have to go through before the rule could occur.
Questions or comments?
This language does not put a burden on the inspector of a time frame to where, I mean, it's just automatically invalidated. It's not suspended or anything like that, right?
Correct.
Right. Okay, good.
So we still follow the inspector's, you know, expiration date, so it could still go delinquent and get canceled.
And FA as well. So you might be invalid, but you also have your other status of you're active. Oh, no, you're now expired because you didn't renew. Oh, no, you didn't keep up your FA, so now you're actually technically suspended. So this is just a different tool or different...
Because the other verbiage kind of, you hang in a couple areas there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this keeps you from being home. I like it.
Okay. And let's move down, if there's no more comments, to R430120, complaint review process.
This is going into the next part of our agenda, which is EAC volunteers. And I just want...
On the agenda, the board shall select a pool of volunteers who have submitted resumes and letters of interest to serve on an enforcement advisory committee. Did you make any changes to this?
No, I'm just presenting it to you to show you what it is and for you guys to discuss.
Has this been written someplace else?
This is R430120, so this is the extent of our choice of picking EAC members. Because you wanted to, last meeting you were asking, so how are they chosen? What is the criteria? This is the criteria, this one sentence.
Because there were some that had less than a year experience earlier, yeah.
Well, we haven't done anything about that.
You're going to.
And again, this is not just home inspection. This is the entire EAC volunteer pool. This includes all the other professions and everything else like that. And this also includes public members, you know, who are not professionals licensed with this board.
Okay, so the only question that we really have is whether our EAC committee members are qualified to work on EAC committees, or EAC committee.
So I would say the selection is basically they give us their letter of intent and their CV. It's presented to the board, and the board says yay or nay. And I can't tell you if it's the board's decision to do that, because there's no current criteria that says...
No, I remember with Doug Parlin, it wasn't going to the To
No, it always goes to the board.
It's always.
Well,
there's a list.
Did it eventually?
Always.
Okay,
anytime
because
there's...
I remember he used to come to this committee and to take recommendations, yay or nay, on specific letters of interest. And then I guess he took it to the board at that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Are we still going to do that?
Would you guys like to see EAC CVs and such prior to it going to the board?
Yeah.
We'd like to see the letters of interest and the resumes.
Mm-hmm. I don't see why we couldn't.
As a committee, yeah, that's smart.
Before we send it off to the board, don't you think that home inspector should have a
minimum standard?
Finger in the mix?
We can
we're just talking about EAC members here. It just seems like, you know, as long as someone's in good standing, you know, we're probably going to accept them, right? I mean, as long as they can fog a mirror, they're in.
They look at the CV, but we always do disciplinary action background and so forth. That's also presented if they've ever had a case against them or anything like that for the board to be aware of.
And if they did, you alert the board to that.
Correct. We don't disqualify them as staff. It goes before the board with all the information that we can gather about that.
I mean, I'm fine with staff doing the review of the ACs. I don't know why we have to have our eyes on them.
I don't think we do either, except that the quality of some of our EAC members is questionable.
That's experience, huh?
I see that.
That's going to happen, right?
Well, I guess it's going to happen regardless.
You guys do have differing opinions amongst each other about things.
My concern is that EAC members don't understand one primary rule of an enforcement advisory committee for home inspectors, and that is to hold the respondent to the minimum standard. Okay? I've seen them try to force their standards on above the minimum standard in discipline, in evaluating
That's true, Peter, but I can say that's why we've taken extra steps to ensure we have our legal counsel, we have Kurt, myself, or Orlean present, as well as educating the investigators more in the practice, minimum standards. You know, I don't know
what
Orlean speak to that, but that is still maybe...
If that were to come up, someone would say, as a reminder, this is for minimum standards only. You may have your own standards, but we have to follow the minimum standards.
Okay, so you feel that that's good enough, because I've seen that fail at least once this year. Where it went to the board with the wrong recommendation, in my opinion. Simply because one home inspector on the EAC was holding it, could not bring himself down to the minimum standard.
If I may, I hate to interrupt, but we're getting off the agenda item, which really has to do more with looking at the R-430-120. We certainly can agendize a deeper discussion of sort of the process that way, if you would like, but I think I may be getting a little bit beyond the agenda item for today.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
We'll stop.
You're welcome.
Okay.
So, next on the agenda is the parallel inspection evaluations. So,
I requested to add this on, but it kind of tied into our discussion earlier regarding the 4 units or less, and you know, just the pushback that initial applications that we've been getting regarding the parallel inspections and what's acceptable and what's not. So.
Sorry, it's a moving target, guys.
it is, and it keeps coming back to haunt us. What have we resolved on the parallel inspection evaluations? That we're going to accept any dwelling, and that's what we want to change this to?
I would say that we're just following the law as it currently reads, as the residential use. And I would like to introduce, if you guys haven't met him already, Stephen Von Ehrenkrook, who is now board staff, ex-home inspector, now inactive.
Right.
Who is our home inspector, home inspection report assessor.
All right.
So he is going to be the primary gentleman who is going to evaluate parallel inspections that come in, as well as assess parallel inspections for EAC, prior to an EAC.
Assess the allegations.
Correct. So this is the gentleman. He's already been at work. We're really happy he's here.
Expedite the processes.
Consistency is what we need.
It's great.
We are really happy that you talked him into doing this.
Well, for $50 an hour, he should.
No. But he's here if you guys have questions, or if you want to say anything as well. But
well, before Steve does, with him on the in this position,
correct.
Does that mean that we're not sending these allegations out to one or more or two or more inspectors now?
Well,
we're going to stay in Steve's his desk?
For clarification, so there's basically two piles here. There's licensing and there's enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Licensing, everything's going to go his way unless there's somehow a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so all licensing is going to go his way. On the enforcement side, currently, he would do one of the assessments and then an EAC member would do the second assessment.
Okay.
Steve is doing the assessments, and the investigators are all going to through the home inspector training.
And that's the current.
And we're gonna do that.
So okay.
Okay, so
my bad.
The investigators are going to be evaluating the reports.
No, Steve is going to be evaluating, but we're doing our best to educate the investigators a little bit more in the process too.
Okay, so it's just for
knowledge.
Knowledge, yeah.
Yeah.
Education, more education and knowledge.
So as a member of the EAC committee, all I will be expecting would be EAC meetings.
Correct.
Correct.
No more assessments.
Well,
no more parallel.
You know,
that's why
I
haven't been getting
be
any
need.
Applications lately.
If Steve has a conflict of interest or if there's a need for a second opinion or something, then he would still be reaching out to EAC members. But
he might go on vacation.
Yeah, there's always going to be that option to reach out to.
Thank you. Now we're options.
Steve be normally attending our meetings?
That's the point. Get people through.
Okay. I think it'd be good if he's able and available to, and if it's in the budget, it'd be good to have his input.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, especially as the assessor, he should be at the EAC committee meetings.
No, not necessarily the EAC committee meetings, but these meetings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. He gets paid by the hour. You got to watch that.
Okay. I believe that brings us to the end of our Section 5, review, discuss, and take possible action on the following. Which brings me back to the short version. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm inclined to want to send that short version to the board for approval. And I'd like to discuss that.
Well, now you have the issue with the ASHI standards, right? And the four units that need to be looked at before.
Not your short version.
Did we decide that there were four units?
Contain that language even in the version. The four units are less than
we
need to figure that out.
We either need to approve the SOP or not.
Text me.
Because Roger's got to make that happen.
Okay, so what we want to do is we want to send the standards back to ASHI. Arizona ASHI, to see whether or not we can eliminate the four units or less and make it a completed residential dwelling. Okay? And should that come back to us done, then we would be in a position to move the short version to the board. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to entertain any motions today. We'll just do that.
Okay,
and see what Arizona ASHI has to say about that. Were there any other changes, Kurt, that you remember that Arizona ASHI would have to address?
I don't recall. I think that's the only thing that came up.
And does anybody have any problem with pushing the standards, the shorter version, through the board and into rule change prior to the big rule change?
So, again, I think you want the standards. So I understand the standards need to be updated and reapproved prior to us doing the short version.
Right. All right, and the short version only has the standards and two other small changes in it.
Correct.
Any comments? Hearing none?
Never ending.
Never easy, Roger.
Never ending.
It's funny, right?
That's why it's ongoing. And, all right.
About comedy.
Do we have a committee chairman's report? No. So we'll skip number 6, and we'll go to future agenda items. Home inspector standards of professional practice revisions should still be on the agenda as ongoing. Okay? Possible rules clarification, rules revisions should still be on the agenda as ongoing. Clarification and the statute revisions should be still on there, so C should be on there as ongoing. EAC member recruitment and EAC member criteria, I think, Scott, you said that wasn't on our agenda when we were talking about EAC committee members' criteria.
Which item are you looking at this point?
5D, when we were talking about qualifications for EAC.
Yeah. Oh, certainly, yeah. The EAC member criteria are valid for discussion. The discussion was getting into more of an analysis of existing EAC members
and
issues with the process itself. So,
all right. We should keep that on and discuss EAC committee member qualifications.
Okay, I'm not sure what we're going to discuss there, but, I mean, you know their qualifications, right?
No. What is it?
They submit, or what, they're certified home inspector? Right, right there.
So they become an inspector, and then they submit this thing, and now you got a guy that's going to violate or try to violate somebody that really has no experience?
Well, the board had to look at it and decide that.
Well, his resume would tell us he has no experience, and the board, we would hope, would would be able to understand that and decline.
And it sounded like you wanted to come here first anyways. I know the rule says the board shall select and not the...
Yeah, that would require some kind of change. Okay. I mean, you can't just say, let's create a new pathway.
Right. I was like a step in the... go here and then to the board.
Well, nobody defined what the EAC, what the Rules and Standards Committee is responsible for.
Yes.
Yeah. Criteria for home inspection certification, standards for reports, standards for written exams, standards for education, rules defining conduct, recommendations of financial assurance, other rules and standards related to the practice. I don't know if it would fall under other rules and standards related to the practice, but I guess that's it. We really don't have any authorization to do that.
I think so.
So,
all right, then we drop it off the agenda and just go by what was written in red.
If I can provide some clarity, when there's an applicant for EAC membership, it goes to the board. I look at the time frame of when they were certified, registered with us, and if there's any disciplinary action. And then I include the resume and the letter of interest, which goes to the board.
Along with the grant date?
Correct.
And that's enough?
Right now?
To sit in judgment?
That's what goes to the board, and the board makes that decision.
Mm-hmm. What to do?
Paul? No comment?
Nope.
Randy? No. David? Any comment?
No.
Andrew?
No.
Keith? Sean is
all? I think there should be some experience before somebody sits on the EAC.
And that wouldn't be able to be ascertained in the resume?
But you're making it's up to, there's no requirement is what I'm saying.
Well, they have to be certified home inspectors, so they've met a standard and some experience.
Well, all right, so you guys put limitations on parallel inspectors.
And peer reviewers.
And peer reviewers, why?
But not on
because
EAC
this is
members.
An overarching statute that applies to the complaint process. It's not, I mean, for all
and recommended enforcement.
All professions under the VTR, not specific to home inspectors. You want something specific to home inspectors?
How can somebody really judge somebody or their actions without having experience? I find this very perplexing.
And I guess for the next agenda, we can write down the committee looking at
minimal standards.
Well, applications and stuff. What were you talking about before in our staff meeting? It was other boards do it where they kind of have an EAC all day or something like that, where the committee sits and actually reviews.
So there's actual training for an EAC.
No,
no. Like no, we wouldn't want to go that far.
No, a committee like this would review complaints all day. Like
complaints. Got it. Right. Complaint day. Right.
Right.
Right. So maybe it's something to discuss next time.
Right.
Maybe not right here, but just something to discuss that way as another avenue of, you know, there's this, you guys would be the specific group looking at a lot of those kind of things.
Let's leave it on the agenda, D. And then we also want to address Dylan's concern about continuing education.
It's just for CEs, right? Let's talk about continuing education. Let's put that on the agenda. But I'd also like to put on, training for supervising inspectors and discuss that.
So it could be part of the statute bit as well. So because you have to. Can't talk about it here.
That's yeah, been, if it's part of something else we're going to hit, but...
That's been tried. We actually wrote a whole course for that, and
let's put that on the agenda for next time.
Thank
trying
you.
Trying to mandate something
let's stick
for
to
something.
The agenda. Okay, continuing education. Andrew.
On that part with the training for supervising inspectors and being on the agenda, I know one of Dylan's questions, he said some inspectors say, yep, it looks good, and some actually give, it says review, analyze, correct, and return to the applicant. And I think
there seems to be some sort of confusion in that. What does it mean to review, analyze, correct? So it sounds almost like similar to what you guys were just talking about 2 seconds ago.
Yeah, you don't want to put that in writing.
Yeah. And I don't know. It wasn't my question, and I don't know what the confusion is. Like, it seems fairly straightforward to me. But I know Dylan had a question about it. He said inspectors don't know how to give feedback. Like, some give bad feedback, it sounds like.
For next time.
Yeah.
So we don't get into the discussion.
It has to go on a new agenda, but how you want to write it?
Well, you don't have to even take it.
What's your question?
Criteria for supervising.
Dylan wants to know what feedback means. What does it mean to give that feedback?
Clarity on a rule.
Yeah, it's receive, correct, send back, review, certify. I don't know how hard that is. But
I don't either, and I can't speak for him.
Feedback is more important.
I'm more inclined to say we don't need that on our agenda, but does anyone disagree with me other than Dylan, who fell off the face of the earth? Not hearing any more, Kirk?
Just to be aware that it is now in November, and so your position actually is coming up here in January.
Mine? Mm-hmm. In January?
Mm-hmm. So they're going to be...
That's, vote in December.
So that will be the end of me, according to the new rules.
Based on... No, well, there's no new rules yet, so... but I guess that could be something to be discussed at a future agenda.
Well, I come off as chairman in January. Off the committee, actually.
Only if you don't apply, and it's still that whole process that we've done the last 2 or 3 years.
I thought there were new rules to get rid of.
But there is no rule.
It's not effective.
It's not inflation. It's not even written somewhere, but it's not inflation.
So does the BTR not need to send a notice out to all registrants? We have an opening. Doesn't that have to kick into play?
Oh, yeah.
Send an email out.
You better. Mm-hmm.
So.
We didn't get very many applicants last time.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Last time I was up, there were 7 of them.
7 out of 1,000 home inspectors? 7? That's not very many.
Okay.
Anyway, don't go anywhere anytime soon, will you?
I am asking for future agenda items anymore. Hearing none, we have to talk about future meetings. Now, we generally take off December.
Unless you guys are going to have a massive Christmas party you want to invite us to, otherwise.
If you guys want to come barbecue, we will have a party.
Is it a barbecue this year?
Only if you're bringing the barbecue.
Oh.
Don't be looking for a vegan agenda.
Vegan, yeah, for sure. So, any reason why we have to meet again the rest of this year, as far as your timing for the board, anything else? I mean, really, the work is coming back to Arizona chapter and then repackaging and sending the short version out.
Right.
That can all happen without us, right? Except once Roger...
We need to make a motion to send it to the board.
Do we
need a motion from here to send that to the board?
Yeah.
Scott,
that was helpful.
Can I make a motion that? I don't know.
Whenever in doubt, it's always best to make a formal motion.
But...
Make it contingent.
So would we need to wait until Roger can bring back the updated approval from AZ Ashi and then just have like a very quick telephonic meeting and have, if it was really fast, we have to do it the next week for us to get it on the next board meeting. Beyond that, it would be the end of January. No pressure, Roger.
You can do a conditional
approval.
That would be fine, or it could be a motion to send it to the board subject to
Ashley's approval of that one change and
just say what it was. Okay. Yeah, it could be that. Returning to no changes. Yeah.
I'll entertain that motion.
All right. So let me take a stab at this. Motion
recommend.
And help me with this, Kurt. Motion to submit the
short version.
Yeah, I don't want to say short version in the motion, though.
Just the rules package.
So submit the rules package
to the board.
We'll know which one you're talking about.
for approval by the board.
To the board for approval, right.
Conditional upon?
Conditional upon AZ ASHI.
Approving the change of?
Revision approval.
As discussed.
You got to say that all in one sentence, though. That doesn't cut.
I can't say that again.
Is there a second?
See, I needed somebody scribing that. Back to me. That's what I needed.
Motion.
You want to take a stab at it?
The submit rules package to the board for approval condition that AZ ASHI approves.
Okay, we just need to clean it up a little bit.
Revisions as discussed.
Revisions as discussed. Let's keep it generic.
Or for you
in a motion. Just in case you have a
second.
All right, we got a second.
Any discussion?
Is that written enough to be enforced? Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
I know it's tough. Aye.
Any opposed?
Any opposed? Hearing none?
Just for clarity.
Right, so that's...
The motion carries?
Right, and so what's getting approved here, Roger, is anything but what we talked about, right? In other words, as long as there's nothing else that got changed in the standards,
right.
Then it goes through. But if there's any other change other than the four units, we have to come back before it goes to the board. Okay.
Or no changes at all.
If somebody wants to throw some other change in, or Brick wants to throw something else in, then we have to go back to the board. It's only there's one change that...
I think it'll fly.
Okay.
The wording you're looking for is completed residential dwellings.
Okay? No, not completed.
Okay.
You ready for future meetings? Future meetings, right. Future meetings. So we're back to that. So then with the motion, can we look to February, or what are we looking at here?
I think February is where we normally jump to.
Yeah.
However, we do want to keep in mind that there will be a telephonic meeting, a short meeting to address the motion only.
It may not be because we just made this motion, right? So we may not need a telephonic meeting.
Correct.
Because we just made the preliminary condition.
Yeah.
I apologize.
It was in lieu of, right?
Yeah. You're right. You're right. I forgot the second half of that conversation.
Or is this something to do with you standing on the board?
No, we don't worry about that till January.
No.
Oh, wait a minute.
Wait till we kick them off.
That's the board issues. That's not a rules and standard committee issue.
Okay.
That's going to be strictly done by the board. And future meetings, February. Anybody have a good date? Which staff should be involved in this for a good date? What should January look like?
Eight,
I turned 70 in January.
Eight.
Wow.
Eight.
You look good, man.
I turned 70 in January.
How about the 8th?
Well, he has to come off.
The 8th?
You can start pulling from your 401k.
Does that look good?
Sorry, January or February?
February.
Oh, February.
8th or 15th?
15th isn't good. The 8th
not good.
Is good.
You want to try for the 8th?
It's good for me.
Let's go for that. 2-8. 2-8.
Yeah, I'll be in Vegas.
It's a Wednesday. We'll be in Vegas.
Yeah, we've got conference.
Is that
she conference?
Well, I'm going to be there also. Is that week?
No, it's,
no, it's the last week.
31st to the 2nd.
Oh, but you're staying over to gamble, is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's right.
I got so much money.
You'll be dried out by then, don't worry.
Just don't forget to send us that picture of you dumpster diving.
Yeah, it stays in Vegas. All right, so we're ready.
So
we got 2-8.
February 8th.
Wait a minute, if Roger's not
going to
be here.
No, he is.
No,
he will be here.
The 8th is fine.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the 8th... And I'll entertain the final
9:30, right?
Yeah.
Motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you all.